Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys,
we're live. Of Blog Talk Radio's own black sheep with white clothing, BAMS Radio, broadcasting high atop from Bluff Park, Alabama. With me, I hope I've got Carrie. Carrie, you on with us?
Yes, sir.
No, you're not.
no, you're not.
Flip, are you on?
I hope so.
You're on. Thomas or The Rock Watts. Rock, how you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. I'm on.
You're on. I got okay.
Right.
Two out of three. Let me get Carrie on. I think I've got him up as Tim Brando. So let me add him to the call. You guys chit chat for a bit, and I'm going to get Carrie rocking with us. And welcome to the show.
Well, it's wonderful to be back, especially in a time where Bama is kicking ass and taking names. Auburn is falling to pieces, and the season is about to get genuinely interesting as we head into what I think anybody with half a brain would argue is the toughest run of Bama's schedule. Tennessee being, and I'm, don't take me wrong on this now, but Tennessee being sort of easing into the meat of that schedule, where we've got Mississippi State probably going to come into Bryant-Denny undefeated, LSU, and to my mind, what could end up being the toughest game of Bama's schedule with Texas A&M. So don't think we have been in cruise control to this point. We've seen steady improvement, but there have been a couple of moments this season where we've fallen asleep a little bit at the wheel, and we cannot do that moving forward with the schedule that we've got staring down the barrel of. So, gentlemen, I am curious to hear your thoughts on a Missouri team that was giving up just over 100 yards a game rushing, and Bama has not one but 200-yard rushers against a pretty decent front seven. So curious to hear your thoughts on how the running game looked, curious to hear your thoughts on how AJ's knee looks, and gosh, I hope we can avoid talking about AJ's mom, but I'm sure it'll come up. So guys, how are you?
Well, I'm pretty good, Blip. And about Alabama's ground game from Missouri, that was definitely the best the offensive line has played up to this point. They just mauled the front seven of Missouri. The only couple of times that there was any kind of question, one of them, McCarron, got hurt, and the other, AJ, just dumped the ball off. So, great game for the offensive line. It shows even more so the ability of when Alabama plays up to spec, up to their ability, they're just really hard to beat.
Well, yeah. I mean, you'll find no argument here. I think we talk a lot about the internet component of the fan base. And I think that element of the fan base wanted to see the offensive line performance that we got this past weekend from day one. And, let's face it, when you move your left tackle to center, when you've got a first-time starter at left tackle, you've got the kind of movement on the line that we had as far as moving kids around. Sure, we returned a lot of starts, but positions were shuffled. It takes time to gel, and I think that gelling occurred, and I can only hope that we see that level of performance every game moving forward, because the O-line, they really did. I know it was rainy, and it's probably trite to say this, but the phrase mud hole, I think, applies for what the offensive line was able to do this weekend.
No disagreement for me. It was great. It'll be interesting to see how that offensive line, if they can continue that level of intensity against a Tennessee, even I'll call it front three, that they've got some beefy boys. I'll talk about Daniel McCullers when we actually sit down and get into the guts of the Tennessee defense. But they've got a 6'8", 375-pound nose tackle. So that's going to be a real interesting challenge this week.
Boy, I remember Bama's recruitment of McCullers very, very well, and I remember wanting him in that class badly and thinking when Tennessee signed him, I thought, uh-oh, he's going to be a handful. The big story, though, on most Bama fans' lips this week has been the comments from Darrington Sintemore, the former Alabama end, who I always remember watching Sintemore on the field when he played at Bama, and he was not a starter, but he got enough snaps for us to get a glimpse of what the future held for the young man. I always remember him
Okay, we are back up. We had a little technical difficulty. Sorry.
That was a lot of a technical difficulty.
Well, I'm running the call now, so I should be able to run the board while you get Carrie fixed up or whatever, Bird.
And have you still got Blip on?
I have Blip on, looking from what I see. Blip, are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
As you were saying, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got a mouthful of raisinettes when we went dead there. It started... started cursing Apple and Mac technology.
I'm, you know what?
It sounded like Tourette's syndrome over here, I'll tell you.
Did it?
It did. There was a lot of profanity.
Hello?
I'm glad we didn't go out over the air with that. Okay, so anyway.
You're there. Sintemore. Terry's there.
Hello? Is this thing on?
Yeah, it sure is. Darrington Sintemore, when he played at Alabama, it seemed like he always overran the quarterback, that the motor was running too high, and they needed to dial it back a little bit and play more in control. And certainly the question when he left the team was never the talent. Kid's an amazing pass rusher. The question was maturity and some of the things going on campus in regards to Sintemore doing the things necessary for him to excel in the Saban system. He just wasn't getting it done. Some goofy stuff in the dorms, some unacceptable things in the classroom, and they decided to part ways. Well, Darrington went to a press conference this week up in Tennessee and decided to flap his gums a little bit, and I'll toss it back at you guys to share some details on what exactly was said in that press conference about what Sintemore's got in store for us this weekend.
Oh, he's an idiot. I mean, it's, you know, the fact that Saban wouldn't kiss his butt as he walked down the hall, when he would walk down the hall and all of a sudden there, you know, it's like, Saban, you don't exist. And Darrington, you don't exist. There we go. I'm back. Can you believe this? Too much technology. This is like putting a loaded gun in the hands of a 2-year-old kid.
Well, I'll just say, Sintemore, reading some of his little press clippings that I've seen, he'll see in the hallway and walk right past you like he doesn't even see you. Saban is the character that you have to earn being in Saban's purview. And if he's not intelligent enough to realize that, it's probably better that he's not on the team anymore, just because I know that, and I'm not even in the complex.
So. Well, Saban's not Mr. Hokey Jokey Slap My Smoky guy anyway. I mean, he's just not with anybody. I mean, I don't even know if he's that way with his wife, to be honest with you. And it's just, if Darrington was looking for the big homey family situation, Darrington, did you eat your peas, you know? Weren't those rolls good at lunch type of thing? That's
you
not
Nick
sure
Saban. We're awesome at practice today.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so great.
Yeah, thanks for showing up, Darrington.
Yeah, good job for doing what you're supposed to. But he wasn't doing what he was supposed to do, and he was scolded for it. He didn't like that. So now he sure is happy that he is playing under Derek Dooley, who is a much more easygoing guy. He's an easier coach. And the thing that sticks in my crawl about the comments, I get that you're a disgruntled former player. You know, I was done wrong by Nick Saban. But for you to go out and say, this isn't about Bama. I don't want to beat Bama. I want to beat Saban. And to sort of single him out, and it has probably endeared him to the Tennessee fan base. I'm sure they ate it up. But for me, man, I hope Quanjo grabs a hold of him by the throat and and LaMichael Fannings his ass.
Wait a minute. That wasn't Sporting. Wait a minute, Blip. You can't do that. That's not kosher.
That's an awesome play.
I thought it was a great play, too. I thought, welcome to football. And it may have been a little over the top. Okay, I admit. But still, I sat there and laughed. I had a grin from ear to ear. You know, it's he took the guy down. And it's like, who was it that made a comment on one of the news shows? Said, the dude didn't get that much playing time, you know? He was excited.
Yeah. It was a great play.
So anyway,
it wasn't all that different from a tackle that Dante Hightower made that was lauded by Gary Danielson as one of the best tackles he's ever seen. So, you know, we're talking about great degrees of is it gray or is it more Battleship? I'm not sure which color it is.
Yeah. It's and as Bama fans, of course, we're going to take up for the kid, but. Bottom line was, it didn't look like it was vicious. I mean, it was a fun tackle. It was like WWF right there on my screen. And I think everybody laughed and slapped their hands and said, that's pretty cool. Ms. Bird was jumping up and down. So it got her off the couch.
You know, it was a little over the top, I agree. But at the same time, it's football. Am I glad if the young man had been injured, would I be happy about it? No, I would probably be like, whoa, whoa, hold on. But I'm unwilling to say it was a terrible thing because the kid didn't get hurt. The kid popped back up and ran for 10 yards. Play over. All this national media brouhaha is just insane. But I will give Nick Saban a little bit. I'm going to give him a plug here. You know, Alabama radio show, give him Nick Saban a plug. Ha ha. He did feel it was a little over the line, and he handled it in a very, you know, just astute, quick, no fanfare type thing. Probably running extra laps we don't know about, but then just writing apology letters and a phone call. Done, game over, move on. That's where I'm at with that whole situation, you know?
Well, again, I hope that every one of our five starting offensive linemen at the end of Saturday night, this coming Saturday, I hope every one of them has to write Derek Dooley and Darrington Sentimore an apology letter for the body slams, chokeholds, and suplexes that we dropped bombs on that kid for flapping his gums like he did.
I'm with you. Yeah, let's go ahead and get the – let's in fact, BAMS listeners, let's go ahead and send a pack of note cards down to the players and let them, you know, have those ready on Monday of next week so they can send notes of apology. Gosh, I'm sorry.
I want to beat Saban. It's personal with Saban. You know what? Why don't you just call my mama fat? Damn.
Let's move away from Sentimore and let's talk more in a generality about the team. Do any of the three of you guys, and Kerry's been awfully quiet, let's throw this out to him first, but do you see there as being a snowball's chance, an HE double hockey sticks, that Tennessee going to upset Alabama this week?
I wouldn't put a very high percentage on it, but they do have two great wide receivers, Cordarrelle Patterson and Justin Hunter, and they do have a quarterback who has the ability to get hot. So Snowball's chance in hell, I'd give it about a 1 out of 20 chance. I think it's going to be uncomfortably close for a while, but in the end, I think Alabama will win by between 17 and 21 points. But I think it's going to be close for a while because adjustments will have to be made on stopping Patterson and Hunter. And they don't have much of a running game, and one of their better running backs, Rajon Neal, is hurt. But Tyler Bray has the ability to get hot and keep a game closer than it ought to be, maybe. Who among us four thought that the 09 Tennessee game would be close? I thought we beat the hell out of them. And it took a couple block kicks to prevent them defeating us. So rivalry games are funny that way. But this team this year, they seem to have the ability to get focused before a game. At times they lose focus during a game, like when crazy weather delays happen and all. But, if I were picking a score, I'd go something like Alabama 37, Tennessee 17, but it being close until maybe middle of the third quarter or beginning of the fourth quarter. I think they'll put up a fight. I don't think they're going to lay down for sure. And Tyler Bray and those receivers are going to be tough. I think Cordarrelle Patterson is a faster version of Julio Jones. He's that good. So, yeah, there is a slight snowball's chance, but not much of one.
Rock.
Well, I'm with Kerry, but I'm not as high on Tyler Bray. If he's not a head case, he can be a great quarterback. It's just he's shown that if you give him some adversity, he just folds up like a cheap tent. The two wide receivers, Justin Hunter and Cordarrelle Patterson, will be playing on Sundays, and they will probably be making a lot of money playing on Sundays. My thing is, how long can the Tennessee defense sustain the intensity needed to contain Alabama? Blip and I just got done saying that the Missouri game was the first game where the offensive line really played, you know, out of their minds great and just blew apart a defense that was good against the run. Tennessee's defense just isn't very good outside of the big nose tackle and linebackers that have a ton of talent but haven't really shown it this year. So I don't know. I think because it's an SEC road game, there is a decent shot. But looking at it on paper, it just looks like a mismatch. I'm with Kerry to a point. I think a 37-17, 37-21 type deal is well within the realm of possibility. But at the same time, if Alabama comes out and punches Tennessee in the mouth and takes the crowd out of Neyland Stadium, the game will be a 42-3 just walloping.
I certainly sense, because this is the Tennessee game, some of the stats you throw out the window. But, and I'm not usually a stats guy, but I'm going to go there. I'm going to go to my spreadsheet here, and here is why Tyler Bray is going to fall into Thomas's category of meltdown. Because we know, and I'm going to hybrid your two comments here. I'm going to take from Kerry pointing out that the running game is a little banged up with Neal out, and they've got one of their true freshmen that had shown some promise a little bit dinged up. Will probably play, but a little dinged up as well. They're certainly nowhere close to 100% with the running game. I think we're going to be able to play, you know, we're not going to have to stack the box and play the run all the time, which means we'll be able to get to the quarterback, focus on coverage. Bray is going to be sacked in this game. Tennessee's giving up a lot of sacks. And if you were to hazard a guess, how many different Alabama players are credited with at least a partial sack this season? How many guys would you forecast have a sack?
I'd say seven or eight.
I'd go eight or nine.
Let me hit you with the lists. C.J. Mosley has 2.5. Vinny Sinceri is credited with a half a sack. D. Milliner is credited with a half a sack. Adrian Hubbard has 3.5. Ed Stinson has 3. Robert Lester has 1.5 sacks. Damian Square has 2. Jeffrey Pagan has a half a sack. Nick Perry has a sack. Xavier Dixon has a sack. Denzel Duvall has a sack. Quentin Dial has a half. And D.J. Pettway has a sack and a half. That's 12 defensive 13. Players.
Yeah, I 13.
I'm sorry, I miscounted. That's 13 defensive players that have been in on a sack this season, guys. We are getting to the quarterback big time.
Big time.
And it's not just the starting three guys on the D-line. It's everybody getting back there. And Bray is going to be seeing an awful lot of crimson helmets in his chest. So I don't think he's going to have time to get in a rhythm. I think we're going to get to him early. The fact that we have had, and again, going back to Mizzou being a pretty stout defense as far as stopping the run, they had been respectable thus far. And we had 200-yard runners, and not just, you know, 100 yards and 102 yards. Eddie ran for 177, and TJ had 140 and something, both well over 100, just dominating. And Drake looked pretty good, too.
As did Sims, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Heck, yeah. So I think it's going to be, you know, usually – going into this weekend, the third weekend in October, I get a little bit of butterflies. Uh-oh. It's Tennessee. We got to worry. Because, heck, when I was in school, I was in the middle of the doldrums. That was when Tennessee rattled off like 7 or 8 in a row on us. It is so nice to be on the other side of that now. And this year, I for whatever reason, I have this sense of calm and confidence that we're just going to take care of business. I've got my cigar ready. Big pimping this weekend, y'all.
I've got my cigar ready, too.
Are you doing the bull dance, feeling the flow? 13 defensive players have been in on a sack, guys.
Absolutely.
Straight balling.
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to go back to the Cinemore thing, which traces back to the lovely WWF tackle that we saw last week. I have said for some time that Alabama's defense has a streak of mean in it this year. I think the stats are starting to show that. I think that pile driver tackle is showing the streak of mean. These guys are out to physically impose their will on other teams to the point that it's like, do you, Kerry, or Rock, one of the two, do you guys have the rushing yards that Missouri had this week? It was like 54. Am I right? Rock, you got that?
I'm pulling it up right now. Yeah, I know it was -1 until the very end. So
at the very end, they got a little bit of positive yardage, and that was after, again, we had done an awful lot of swapping out of personnel. And once you get that, verify for me that they didn't even hit 100 yards as a team. As a team.
Their net rushing was 3 yards.
3 yards. Okay. I'm telling you guys that this team has got a streak of mean. They are out to – and it's been every week. You know, Nile Davis, who's he? I mean, all I heard before the first of the season was how Nile was a future NFLer. He did Arkansas, and Nile Davis did absolutely 0.00 Mr. Blutarski against Alabama.
Well, I'm sorry if I offended anybody by saying Tennessee would score 17 points on this great defense we have, considering the fact that they have two NFL wide receivers and a probable NFL backup quarterback.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I offended anybody by that, and I wasn't mean to say they would get all 17 of our starters, but I'm just not brass enough to think we're going to line up and beat everybody we play 42-3 just because we're Alabama. These guys recruit, too. They got scholarships, too. And they don't suck. Their offense does not suck. Their defense isn't that great. They won't be able to stop our running game. I admit that. But I'm going 37-17. I've been very close on my picks this year. I said 49-9 last week.
I'm not
dead on, but I'm pretty daggum close. So I don't mean to piss off the gods of Alabama football fanship because I'm saying that a team with two NFL wide receivers and a backup NFL quarterback can score 17 points partially against our backups. I'm saying we're going to get at least 37. I may be low on that. I kind of can see 41 or 42 for us. But just showing up and shutting everybody out the rest of the year, it's not realistic. Sorry, it's not.
No,
I think Auburn will kick a field goal against us.
I
I didn't start back, so I think Auburn will take a field goal.
I think that what we're seeing is that these guys are trying to establish themselves as having their own identity, and I think part of that identity is don't compare me to last year, don't compare me to anybody, that I am my own defense, and even the second and third stringers that are coming out are playing lights out. So I don't give Tennessee a snowball's chance. Like Blip, I've already got my cigar ready to go and my end zone dance. And as much as I hate Auburn, I detest Tennessee. And for personal close reasons, I really, really, really. In fact, you know, we're 4 minutes away from a break. We're going to go ahead and start one of my Rocky Top parodies. Let's go ahead and get this one on. And when we come back, what are we going to talk about when we come back? Carrie, what kind of juicy stuff you got for me?
Meniscus Gate.
Meniscus Gate. See, I knew that you guys would be. So if you're listening this evening, enjoy the show. This is our I Hate Tennessee special. Because I don't know of four people that detest Orange more than Carrie, Blip, Rock, and the Bird. Well, I thought I was going to play that. There we go.
I lost all my teeth in Rocky Top early on in my life. I'm a man who loves my family, so my sister's my wife. I get liquored up on Rocky Top before I lay me to bed. I wake up to chicken hollers and bovines licking my head. Rocky Top, you ought to see our unforked family tree. Good old Rocky Top, don't know our ABCs, don't know our ABCs. Revenuers come to Rocky Top trying to locate our steel. Told my pa I wouldn't shoot them, but hey, they make a good meal. All my years I spend on mountaintops in the heat of the South. Better not come up to see us if you've got a real pretty mouth. Rocky Top, you ought to see our unforked family tree. Good old Rocky Top, don't know our ABCs, don't know our ABCs. Rocky Top, you ought to see our unforked family tree. Good old Rocky Top, don't know our ABCs, don't know our ABCs. Watch them volunteers on Rocky Top, hope they win all the time. We like wearing orange camouflage, come straight from the duck blind. Rocky Top, you ought to see our unforked family tree. Good old Rocky Top, don't know our ABCs, don't know our ABCs, don't know our ABCs.
That was brought to you by the All Four Teeth that will be in Neyland Stadium, passed around from fan to fan at the Rocky Top Orange Fest. And what color orange does Rocky Top remind you of, Carrie?
Well,
Kraft macaroni and cheese. Why, they're the walking Kraft mac and cheese commercial. You would think that they would have, Kraft would have the big billboard outside the stadium. Rocky Top, you'll never be. I actually have got that version of Rocky Top. I don't think I can play that one.
Please do.
We'll see how the show goes. We'll see how the show goes.
F you, Rocky Top.
It's the one. That's the one. Anyway, but we've got a couple more Rocky Top parodies or Tennessee parodies that we'll throw at the fan base. And
Please tell me you've got Shirley Q. Liquor.
Of course I do.
Oh, God, it gets me every time.
I've got...
Folks, it's worth staying tuned into the show until the bitter end just to hear Shirley Q. Liquor.
Shirley Q. Liquor. Anyway, yeah, you know, we beat Missouri to death, and if you don't listen to us on Sunday night, the Sunday night show's usually pretty spirited because we do a pretty good job of really kind of taking the stats and tearing the team apart and putting it back together again. And so for your Wednesday night listeners, we have to not really apologize, but just kind of let you know the reason we don't look back that much is because we already did it on the Sunday night recap show. So moving ahead, you know, looking at Rocky Top and Derek Dooley, and I guess before we move into Meniscus Gate, what are the odds of Derek, you know, being replaced after the end of the season? I see him as being not long for this world.
I think it depends on the next 2 weeks. If he is able to upset either Alabama or South Carolina, he has a prayer of retaining his job. He loses those two, he can just start packing up his office.
Well, maybe if he goes ahead and starts with his underwear this weekend and gets his socks and drawers and you know, that stuff, and maybe some of his old memorabilia from his other schools that he coached at, that's a start, you know, because I don't think he's going to win either game. I don't give them either a snowball or a prayer that they're going to beat either South Carolina or Alabama, especially not Alabama. South Carolina, who knows? They, you know, went a little schizo last weekend against LSU. I thought they would stay with LSU. It's like, okay, which team's going to show up yet again?
Yeah, Spurrier can find a way to lose that game.
I think Spurrier can find a way to lose lots of games, kind of like Coach Chizik. And I don't want to harp on Auburn, but oh my God.
Why not?
Why not? And by the way, folks, you know, this part of the show, if you want, give us a call, 714-510-3707. Love to hear you and your thoughts on Tennessee and why you love Tennessee as much as we do. If you've got any personal stories, anecdotes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, pass them along to the rest of the BAMS listeners. I'll just give you a quick anecdote from this week. My drugstore, the guy that owns my drugstore, a little family pharmacy, in fact, I'll give him a plug right now, Robert's Discount Pharmacy up in Bluff Park. One of the best guys on the planet, except for he is a dyed-in-the-wool Big Orange fan. And I asked Robert, I said, what do you think the odds are of you guys, you know, doing something this weekend? He says, zero. He said, Tyler Bray is as gifted a human being from a quarterback perspective as God ever graced the earth with. He said, he is dumber than a box of rocks. Tyler Bray is just the size of stupid. And he said, going up against a Saban defense with the complications that Saban will throw against you, Tyler does not have the smarts to think through or to realize the different schemes that Saban's going to throw at this guy. So he may have two NFL wide receivers carry. He may be as talented as we've seen at under center in a long time with many, many quarterbacks that are out there. But, you know, if this guy's right and he is really dumber than a box of rocks, and he kind of showed that against Georgia, by the way, then they may be in for a real, real, real long day. Okay, anyway, off that. Back to Auburn. I asked another young man this week who was kind enough to be helping me as in a retail outlet, and I'm wearing nothing but Alabama gear since this is Tennessee Hate Week. And if the listeners are not running around fully garbed like it's game day, then shame on you, because every single day, look, Kerry, you're not even wearing crimson tie. He's sitting here wearing North Carolina blue in the studio. It looks very nice, but I mean, this is Hate Week. Come on, man.
It's aqua, it's not blue.
Oh, it's aqua. Well, that's right. I've got incandescent lighting down here. But I asked the young man, saw my Alabama stuff, and he just kind of shook his head. He says, I graduated from Auburn. And he said, oh, my gosh, what a season. And I looked at him. I said, you know what? I want to say shame on you and shame on the Auburn faithful for putting your head squarely up your asses, your collective asses, and letting Pat Dye and Jay Jacobs lead you down primrose paths. Whereas right now you have no more Bobby Lauder. You should be shouting from the top of the steeple, hanging off of the cross at the world. You know what? I'm not buying another blame ticket down at Pat Dye Field until you guys absolutely clean house at the top and get a righteous coaching staff in here and a righteous AD and get Pat Dye out of the program. It's whether it happens or not, I don't know. But the Auburn faithful, unfortunately, are so loyal, faithful, and good and true that I want to throw up. But they should be on the warpath. At this point, they should every one of them be on the warpath. Gents?
I agree. I mean, there's not a lot to say from that. You're preaching, Bird.
I totally disagree. I think they absolutely need to embrace the current staff. They need to keep it four more years. Keep them around.
You know, I'm going to use the same line I've used in the past. It's no fun beating a cripple, and those guys are crippled. I mean, and even the kid that I was talking to, he worked up at the car dealership, made the comment. He said, we've got great talent. I said, oh, yeah. We sit and want to recruit top 10 every bloody year. You know, and after 5 years of that, you would think that you would be better than mediocre. And I said, you're not even sniffing mediocre in the butt right now. Mediocre's 5. You got we're 6-6. You're not going to go to a bowl. You're not going to win maybe 2 more games. It's not going to happen. Anyway, well, God bless Chizik. He's a nice guy, and his wife came out and rallied the nation on, I don't know if it was Facebook or Twitter. I guess it was Facebook. And have you guys heard about this, or her invoking?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think Nick Satan.
Nick Satan and getting the collective prayers. You know what they need to do? Well, I'm not going to tell her what they need to do, but it's just – It's scary. I mean, you know, what do they do on Halloween? Trunk or treat?
Some dress in sheets, others dress in blackface.
Oh.
Wow. Carrie went there.
George and Bradley, 36 down, right to the ribs shot. Ow.
Bird, your mic is cutting in and out.
Is that me? Is that
yeah, that's you.
Okay.
I blame the Mac.
It is the Mac.
Mac sucks for radio.
All right, now that's this game. Here we go. Carrie, lead this.
Okay. The quarterback of the University of Alabama, A.J. McCarron, got injured and had to leave the game. Didn't miss any snaps, but had to put a brace on his knee at Missouri in the pouring down rain and was able to come back into the game and successfully execute the offense. While he was on the sidelines, someone examining him thought out loud that there was a possible, very slight, not requiring surgery immediately, tear of his meniscus, which is the fatty pad surrounding the knee joint. Now, how in the heck does something like this get put out on Twitter a few days later? Allow me to explain. And Thomas will back me up on some of this. When the team gets back from a road game, they're excused from football activity until Monday morning. Most of them head to the strip. This is before the MRI has taken place. The MRI takes place on Sunday.
Saturday night, out there with the boys on the strip, talking to the ladies, somehow AJ lets it slip that he might, and I emphasize the word might, have a slight tear of his meniscus. Well, everybody wants to be an insider. So so this is pre-MRI now. Now, I'm going to give you one example of how I know it spread. There are others, but I'm going to give you one example. I was told by a friend of this situation Monday morning. Guess what, Carrie? I went to church yesterday, and I saw my dentist. He goes to my church. And his daughter saw AJ last night. He's got a torn meniscus.
Oh, God.
Hadn't had the MRI yet, okay? No MRI. The MRI takes place Sunday, I don't know, morning or afternoon. This is based on information obtained by less than sober college students on the strip on a Saturday night. Now, that's one person that heard it. If that guy's daughter heard it, that gentleman, you know, I won't even say where he's from, but that, if that gentleman's daughter heard it, other people heard it, and somehow a journalist heard it from three sources. He didn't say that it was a junior in agriculture and a sophomore in communications and a freshman in advertising. He didn't say. Three sources told him that AJ had a slightly torn meniscus. And there was reason, there was medical reason to think that he might possibly have a slight, not requiring immediate surgery, but perhaps a cleanup after the season type of surgery, that he might have that. Then came the MRI Sunday. Then came the results saying he does not have a torn meniscus. He has a serious bruise of his knee. Has he worn a brace in practice this week? Yes. Has he been looking like he's completely mobile, agile, and hostile? He's done a little bit of limping in between drills, slight limping, not anything noticeable, not anything that would dramatically affect his mobility during the game this weekend. Not that anyone could detect in the 7 to 15 minute average the media is allowed to stay during practice. But, you know, there is no reason tonight at his press conference, Saban called the meniscus rumors ridiculously inaccurate. Those are his words, not mine. His mother came on Twitter and blasted said journalist, that's D.D. Bonner, AJ's mom, with 100% false. In reply to his tweet about the three different sources. His cousin, Rusty, came on Twitter and blasted the same journalist, you know, inaccurate, 100% false. So, yeah, there was about a 24 to 30-hour period where there was a chance that AJ might have had a slight meniscus tear that might have required postseason surgery, but that was debunked by the MRI on Sunday, according to the information that I've been told. But that, in a nutshell, is meniscus gate. Now, AJ was never going to be the guy that ran the quarterback counter and got 39 yards like Blake Sims or something like that. And he's, you know, he's fairly mobile for his height and weight and strength level and all. He's fairly mobile. I mean, he's, I don't think that what he suffered is going to dramatically affect anything he has to do Saturday night. But, there you have it, folks. That's the CC Bama version of meniscus gate.
And that whole thing doesn't really surprise me. It shouldn't astonish anybody that college kids go out and talk randomly. I will admit that Bama Hammer did run something about it, but we retracted it almost immediately. And the flip side of the whole deal is players play hurt all the time. All the time. So the dinks and the dunks of a season, common thing. I would be willing to bet that by the end of a college season, a high school season, and, you know, an NFL season, every player that has seen a meaningful snap has some form of bump or bruise or something that requires token amounts of either anti-inflammatory medication or treatment in a training room. So I wouldn't worry about this at all. If it becomes an issue, he won't play. Until he doesn't not play, it's not an issue. In my mind, at least. What do y'all
think? Look, I'm perfectly willing to eat crow if they announce after the bowl game AJ McCarron had minor surgery to clear up some issues with his knee. If they announce it, fine. But the information out there now is that it's not even going to require surgery. Here's what I hope it does. I hope it scares the pro scouts. I do.
You
I hope
want
they
him
say,
here another
you know,
year.
Son, I know that it wasn't a serious injury, but you know, I really need to see you go fully healthy for a full season. Otherwise, you're probably going to be a free agent. That's what I hope happens, selfishly. But who knows how that'll go? I know that Phil Savage has spoken to several different booster groups and told each of them to a man that he is strongly in favor of AJ returning for his senior year. And hopefully AJ will listen to this type of advice. I don't know. It's too early in the process for me to hazard a guess on it. I'm pretty sure that DJ Fluker is not going to listen to the advice that he's getting, despite the fact that he's been brutalized a few times this year in pass protection. DJ is such a wonderful run blocker that he can still help an NFL team probably. Don't know that he would be drafted any higher than the third round, maybe the fourth, but there's still good money paid to those guys, and DJ feels that his family needs that, so I can respect that. But I think if both kids listened carefully to what the pro scouts tell them, that they'd both be back. But I don't think that DJ will be. AJ could go either way right now. I think he's willing to listen to reason. I hope so anyway, but that'll be one of those things that we'll need to follow closely. There are a large number of juniors on this team that are going to get looks this year.
Not be a contrarian like it seems like we are this evening, but do you think the fact that pretty much that entire offensive line is not going to be there next year might be a contributing factor in the fact that AJ may look around and go, well, I might want to jump in and see what happens in the NFL?
It could be a factor, but the left tackle will be there. That's the guy that protects his blind side. Cyrus will be there. And the backup center, while he's not as outstanding of a player as Barrett Jones, Ryan Kelly is considered by those who know much more about football than I do to be the 19-year-old redshirt freshman version of Barrett Jones. He's that good and that smart. So, you know, AJ has fun in college, and who can blame him? But, you know, he'll have a decision to make. He is getting his degree in December. So if he comes back, he'll have to be working on a second degree or a grad student. And AJ doesn't really strike me as the grad student type. I suppose he could start working on a second degree. But I feel like that if he listens to reason, he'll come back. If he just decides I'm determined to go, he'll go. But I'm hoping that this injury will give some scouts and those that perform physicals after the season reason to advise them to come back.
Is it interesting to any of you guys that against Missouri, we didn't see an injury at all? That whenever we pulled AJ, it was Blake Simmons that came in and ran the team.
Handoff for a touchdown. Saw him handoff to Kenyon Drake. We didn't see him do anything significant.
Maybe one play, but as far as I'm concerned, he didn't show up. It looked like Blake ran the team, whereas Ely he came out for one play, didn't he?
One or two.
I mean, it was very, very inconsequential. What does that tell you guys about the going forward if we do have a drop off with an AJ where the entire collective Bama Nation retches and throws over if AJ goes down?
Do you mean this season or do you mean next year or going forward? I'm sorry.
Talking the season that we are in the midst of battle.
Oh, that puts a major damper on Alabama's national title hopes. I don't think Ely can be a caretaker game manager enough to beat an Oregon.
Is Blake the two guy?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. That's what I'm getting at. So Blake Sims is the number two quarterback.
Yes, he is.
There we go. Okay. Where when all this happened. I'm usually on top of this stuff.
Oh, you were probably in New York or Dallas or L.A. sitting out on your balcony or, you know, hanging out with the Laker girls or hanging out with A-Rod teaching how to hanging out with A-Rod teaching him how to hit. I don't know. You probably weren't in town.
Here we go.
Oh, he went Yankees. Uh-oh.
Yeah, don't even go there with the Yankees.
I don't like the Yankees. I consider them the Notre Dame of pro sports, but I have a ton of respect for Derek Jeter, and I was sincerely sorry that he got hurt. I was.
He's and one then, of my favorite players.
I do respect him, though. I mean, I respect the heck out of their legacy. I just grew up a Braves fan, and I just never got into the whole Yankees thing.
Anyway.
So, how's that working out for you this year?
We're in the playoffs.
That's true. We lasted one day. We lasted one day and got brutalized by the worst infield fly call in the history of organized baseball. But we lasted one day in the playoffs. Yeah, and we weren't last year. We choked it away last year. This year we don't choke it away. The refs take it away on the first day of the playoffs.
Chat room is all about it now. What does Jeter have to do with Hate Week? Seriously. You know, nothing. It's a sports show, Viking. But, you know, it's just – it is playoffs. You can't tell me you don't watch a baseball game in your entire life.
We could go NFL and then really derail Hate Week. So
No. Okay, let me bring it back around, all right? Let's do the a real quick blips bounce around the Bama blogs and take a look at what the Bama websites are saying for this week. And we'll start where – Thomas is a primary contributor over at Bama Hammer, where the headline story right now, front page of BamaHammer.com, focusing on the rivalry, saying the Alabama-Tennessee rivalry is out of the top five games of the new millennium, it is the number three rivalry. I could hazard a guess as to what number one and number two are, and I would bet you that Alabama is involved in one of those two. An article worth your attention if you want to kill a couple of minutes. Switching gears, moving over to more of an entertainment site, TowerofBammer.com. Tower of Bammer, talking about the giant rock that the Tennessee fans painted. It's a Tennessee fans drop pros covered rock from space, and it's talking about the giant rock where they have painted Fire Foolie, decorated with no leadership, first loss to Kentucky in 26 years, 14-17 overall record, never beat Alabama, Florida, or Georgia, 0-13 against ranked opponents, never won a bowl game, and on and on and on. So a very entertaining take on the rock paintings over at Tower of Bama. And then one of my favorite articles of the week coming from Bama Online, which you'll find at alabama.247sports.com, revisiting the epic and Saban-defining class of 2008. And what they've done is they've compared the rankings nationally of where the kids came in 2008, you know, three-star, four-star, five-star, how did they all stack up? And they've done an article that they call Re-Ranking the 2008 Class. It's an interesting read. Would definitely recommend you guys take a look at it. The one that sticks out to me and the one that I take issue with, we could go on and on about the top five. Because the top five are Mark Ingram, Mark Barron, Julio Jones, Barrett Jones, Dante Hightower. And to me, there's a little room between them. Out of the original 2008 class, Mark Ingram was ranked 14th. He was number 211 nationally, which put him 14th highest ranked of those kids. They've got Mark Ingram as number one, re-ranking the 2008 class. I think driven primarily by the Heisman. They've got Mark Barron listed as number two. Originally, he was ranked fifth out of those recruits. And they've got Julio Jones coming in at number three, who was originally number one. And I might take issue with some of that. I might move Julio back up to that number one slot and say that he lived up to the billing as the number one guy. And part of me is taking into account his performance as far as the Falcons are concerned and his transition to the pro game. Barrett Jones coming in at number four. He was originally ranked number eight. And Dante Hightower coming in at number five, who was originally ranked number 19 out of that group. So very interesting. They go on to re-rank Courtney Upshaw, Marcel Darius, Terrence Cody, Robert Lester, Damian Square. But as I read off these names, you know, it's starting to sink in just how significant that 2008 recruiting class was. Just unbelievable and a very interesting article. Certainly thought-provoking. Would love to hear your thoughts on it if you guys have read the article and anything else you guys have seen on the Bama blogs this week that excites you.
Well, I haven't read the article, but what was the argument for dropping Julio down? I'm just curious.
Maybe his 25 or 30 career drop in 3 years, probably, maybe.
Well, I think the argument here is that statistics, and it's the first line of the article under Julio, says statistics don't tell the full story with Jones. You know, certainly a big part of his contribution to the Crimson Tide in his collegiate career, his ability to contribute to the blocking, to the running game via the blocking schemes, the leadership that he provided, and the fact that he was dinged up for a significant part of his career. I think had he played every down possible, had he been 100% healthy his entire collegiate career, he might be number one on that list. But the statistics maybe don't bear out how significant a contribution he made.
You know, Blip, I didn't read the article, but the thing about the 08 class that jumped out to me was it was the year that Alabama retook Mobile. That was so huge to do that.
Sure. I mean, that entire St. Pius crew with Mark Barron, and think about the tone. And I remember being so excited about Ivan Matchett. You know, you watch him run the ball as a high school senior. You go, well, goodness, he's, you know, he may be the best running back in this class. Well, Matchett comes in and has a pretty significant injury early in his career and effectively ended his football career. A lot of people thought that Mark Barron may have ended up on the offensive side of the ball and may have ended up a wideout. So that group of kids out of St. Pius was really exceptional. And I think had Matchett ended up sticking, it would have been viewed with even more luster than it is.
Well, it was actually St. Paul's. St. Pius is where Geno Smith played in Atlanta.
Okay,
but I had a chance to scout St. Paul's a number of times during that era, both in Mobile and at Legion Field. And Mark Barron was a hell of a running back. And there was a wide receiver on that team. Name escapes me. Ended up going pro baseball, TJ, DJ, something like that. That was a heck of a player. And A.J. had a lot of weapons his junior year. A.J.'s senior year, not so much the case. They were never a threat to win state that year. They barely made the playoffs. But A.J. made the best of it and worked with the receivers he had to work with. But when A.J. was a junior and Mark Barron and Ivan Matchett, and I wish I could remember the receiver's name, he signed with Alabama but never came.
Talking about Melvin Ray, maybe?
No, Melvin was from Louisiana. This kid was from this kid was on St. Paul's in the graduating year with Barron and Matchett. He signed pro baseball, and he never ended up at Alabama. Had he came, he would have been another great wide receiver. His game was similar to that of DJ Hall, without the off-the-field issues DJ had. But I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But he was a wonderful player and could have been either a safety or a receiver. I mean, the St. Paul's team, AJ's junior year, that won the championship at Legion Field, that was a stud team. Fun to watch.
Now, was Jermaine Prayer also a Mobile kid?
Davidson, I believe.
That's what I thought. So you're right, Kerry. That was, you know, I'm not going to say we've been entirely shut out of Mobile, but we've been shut out of the elite talent for a long time in Mobile, and that was the turning point.
Yeah, And Julio was a big part of that. It really helped a lot. Preston Dial was a part of it, although we had never really had a problem getting white private school kids, no offense. But Julio was a big part of us taking Mojo back and then matching and Baron. And from 08 on, we've pretty much gotten who we wanted from there, pretty much.
Well, let's flip this and look at the bottom of the list, because that's, God, I remember being so excited about the prospects of upgrading our O-line when we got the five-star tackle out of Mountain Brook, and down at, towards the bottom of the list, you know, original rank number 2 on this list, number 15, they've got Tyler Love. You know, he just never quite lived up to that five-star ranking out of high school. So it just goes to show that the stars sometimes are a little bit upside down. You know, Mark Ingram was ranked 14th overall out of that entire crew, and look at what he accomplished.
Yeah. In fact, name Sunday quite a bit. Listen, man, it's 9 o'clock. We're going to take a real quick break. You're listening to Bama. I hope you're enjoying some of our banter about Tennessee, and love to have our guests call in. Listeners, 714-510-3707. We've also wish at 877-763-6728. We'll repeat those several times throughout the show. You are listening to the Hate Week, Tennessee, Orange Sucks, Nothing Sucks, Big Orange, Alabama, Bama.
I lost all my teeth in Rocky Top early on in my life. I'm a man who loves my family, so my sister's my wife. I get liquored up on Rocky Top before I lay me to bed. I wake up to chicken hollers and bovines licking my head. Rocky Top, you ought to see our unforked family tree. Good old Rocky Top, don't know our ABCs, don't know our ABCs. Revenuers come to Rocky Top trying to locate our steel. Told my pa I wouldn't shoot 'em, but hey, they make a good meal. All my years I spend on mountaintops in the heat of the South. Better not come up to see us if you've got a real pretty mouth. Rocky Top, you ought to see our unforked family tree. Good old Rocky Top, don't know our ABCs, don't know our ABCs. Rocky Top, you ought to see our unforked family tree. Good old Rocky Top, don't know our ABCs, don't know our ABCs. Watch them volunteers on Rocky Top, hope they win all the time. We like wearing orange camouflage, come straight from the duck blind. Rocky Top, you ought to see our unforked family tree. Good old Rocky Top, don't know our ABCs, don't know our ABCs, don't know our ABCs.
I hate Tennessee more than I hate Auburn. I just dislike Auburn. I hate Tennessee. See, Tennessee's colors is that throw-up orange. It's not that orange that you can sit with. It's that puke inside of a pumpkin orange. And I don't like pumpkins. So I really don't like Tennessee, man. I can't stress that enough, man. And they losers, they sore losers. I hate Tennessee, man.
And we're back on BAMS Radio. We were just talking about what we're going to go for in this segment. I think we're going to go recruiting. So if you have a recruiting question for Carrie or myself, feel free to give us a shout at 714-510-3707. Blip, I think the floor is yours to get us into some recruiting.
Well, it's a the number of legitimate prospects on the board. You know, we've pretty much signed our class with a few elite slots left. And one of the questions that I have for Carrie is injuries occurring in the order that they've occurred at the positions that they've occurred this year. Do you think the staff has maybe revisited some of the offensive skill players they had their eyes on? And specifically, what I'm looking for from you is, how serious are we with Alvin Kamara?
Serious enough that if he wanted to come, we would take him. I think Georgia has got more to sell as far as immediate playing time and the promise of running back. I don't think, can't put words in our recruiter's mouths, but I don't think Alabama is promising Kamara running back. I think they're telling him, get here, you can try running back, but you may end up being a slot receiver. We feel like you're an athlete that can play more than one position. But when you have a guy as fast as Kamara, you don't just tell him, oh, sorry, we're full. Thanks for whoever yawned just then. But, yeah, I think that they're, if he wanted to come, that they would have a spot for him. They would find a way to get him into class. He's too good and too fast to turn away. Would he 100% sure be a running back when he got to Tuscaloosa? I can't say that for sure. I'm 100% sure he'd be a running back in Athens. Tuscaloosa, I'm probably more like 65 or 70. But would he be able to contribute in perhaps a Marquise Mays type of way? Absolutely. Such a lot of speed this guy has. But, yes, that's a very good point, Blip.
Do you think he's open to the idea of playing the slot?
I do. I think he's open to getting the ball in his hands. However Alabama chooses to do that, whether it's kick returns, reverses from the slot, screen passes from the slot, you know, deep routes from the slot, or lining up in the backfield. I think he's open to it. Eventually, he'll have to make a decision. And if I were guessing right now, I would say Georgia, but it's not a done deal. Alabama's certainly still pushing him hard, and they wouldn't be wasting their time doing that if they didn't feel like he could help at some offensive position.
Well, the juice that I'm hearing on the Alvin Kamara story, I think the reason for Bama fans to be excited, and I don't want to give false hope here, but the reason maybe to raise an eyebrow at this kid is, if it were such a slam dunk for Georgia, he would have pulled the trigger by now. Don't you agree with that,
Thomas?
I honestly don't know about something like that. Recruiting is always interesting because you think it's a slam dunk about a certain prospect. Like, I can remember this time last year, even 6 months ago, Robert Kimdichie was a slam dunk to Alabama.
Right.
So the term slam dunk is almost a misuse in this case. If he's comfortable at Georgia, he's going to keep looking at Georgia, and if that's where he decides he wants to go, he'll commit. But a lot can happen between now and signing day to either help or hurt Georgia. If Mark Richt just tanks the rest of this season, he could be on the hot seat, and that's not a comfortable way for recruiters to go about their business. Let me clarify what I just said. If Mark Richt tanks, I'm not saying he's on the hot seat. I think he just got a contract extension, so I'd be hard-pressed to think he'd get fired. But that is an example of a circumstance that could change that will have a very weird and unknown at this time effect on recruiting. So slam dunk's kind of a weird way to look at stuff, I guess, would be the best way to cut that.
All right. Well, I got another one to fire at you, Gary, because I kind of got a sense prior to the high school football season starting of where your head was at on these players. Now that we've got five or six games of high school football into some of these kids' senior seasons under our belt, and you've seen some film, if you had to choose one between Von Bell and Tony Connor, which would you choose?
Connor.
Tell me why.
Because we need to get a pipeline started back at South Panola University. a.k.a. South Panola High School. And the door has been opened by whatever incident happened between Hugh Freeze, his recruiters, and the coaching staff at South Panola. I don't know what it was, but the door is open now for those kids to apparently go somewhere besides Ole Miss. And the other reason, I guess, is because I've seen Tony play in person. All I've seen on Vaughn is just a very, very few minutes of film, probably not even five. But Tony I saw play a full game in a preseason game at Hoover last year, and he just blew me away. Not just as a safety, but as an athlete, a kick returner, a Wildcat quarterback, a freak. And that's nothing against Von Bell. I'll take him in a heartbeat. He's a great player. But if you're going to make me choose, I'm going to go Tony for those reasons.
And well, we are hearing some extreme superlatives from people like yourself who watch a lot of high school football. I mean, these guys have seen, you know, decades of high school athletes coming out. And I've heard some of the best in the business say, Tony's the best I've ever seen at safety. And I know that's hype, big hype, but is he really that good?
Well, I call him Mark Barron with more speed. So, and Mark's not slow, but if you were to put Mark and Tony in the 40, Tony would beat him by about a tenth.
Well, and just to jump back real quick, for fans that don't know, South Panola High School is one of those just monster high schools that's perpetually excellent at high school football. They travel nationally, they've been on ESPN multiple times, and they put lots of kids into high-level D1 football. So opening up a pipeline to that is a very good way for Nick Saban and his staff to get a very good in for some of Mississippi's best prospects. Mississippi doesn't put out a ton of D1 talent, but the talent it does put out is always quality stuff. Look at the kid that went to the Eagles, the Mississippi State tackle that went to the Eagles, whose name has flown out of my head.
Fletcher Cox.
Yeah, thank you, Fletcher Cox. He was a Mississippi guy that Mississippi State kept in state. Chad Bumpus, the do-everything Mississippi State wide receiver, another in-state guy. Alabama having better access to these prospects is never a bad thing.
Well, and as many D1 prospects as South Panola has graduated up, that's one of the experts. The head coach of South Panola says, Tony Connor's the best I've ever seen at safety. And he's seen a lot of football players.
And the thing is, Blip, you know, with all apologies to Jeremy Griffin, who I'm sure is a wonderful young man, Alabama hasn't had a player worth a damn from South Panola since they signed Deshay Townsend and Dwayne Rudd in the same class. In the 90s, and I'm talking early 90s. So, yeah, they need to get back into that school. And Hugh Freeze has got a buzz going. Obviously, Mullet's got a buzz going right now. So it's not going to be easy. But Tony's listening. And I'll tell you something. Sometimes when Tony plays, I don't know if he's doing it this year or not, but last year, in a lot of his games, he would wear the Mark Ingram houndstooth gloves all game with the A on them. So he's definitely listening. It's really hard to get South Panola kids away from Ole Miss, but you know, Snoop Brazel didn't have a great experience at Ole Miss, and then something has gone on. I don't know exactly what, but something has gone on between Freeza's staff and the coaching staff at South Panola. I don't know exactly what it is, but more than just I have heard that there's some disparity between the staffs. So the door is slightly ajar for Alabama to get Tony Connor. It's just going to be up to Nick Saban and his staff to kick it in, and I think they can do it. I really think Alabama's going to get Tony Connor. I feel confident about it. Maybe more than I should, but I feel pretty good about it.
Hey, I like those gut feelings. When Kerry Clark gets a gut feeling, I listen. So I'm going to fire it right back at you.
In my gut.
Yeah. same question, different spin. I asked you first time around, I said, if you had to choose. You know, so you're basing that just purely off of who's, you know, what's the best thing for Alabama. Now, what's the more likely scenario, Von Bell or Tony Connor? Who do we have the better shot at?
I still say Connor, but it's close. They're both very open and receptive. I don't really think you could turn them both away, although there is a filthy riches at safety. I tell you what, though, this is going to sound stupid, but I don't care. I kind of like to see Alabama sign a couple of extra safeties because I really want to see Eddie Williams go back to offense in the spring, not sooner. I really want to see that big old guy go back to offense and catch some fade routes and stuff. I hate that he's having to play safety right now. He is playing receiver this week on the scout team. He's imitating Cordero, but
oh, he's got the perfect body for it.
Yeah, he does. He does. And I really would love at the beginning of spring for there to be an announcement. Oh, we've moved Eddie Williams back to offense at wide receiver. I'd be like, yes. I like the idea of that guy jumping up in the end zone and taking the ball away from a defender.
Okay, so that's the perfect segue for me then to jump over to the next big time recruit that I'm certain no matter what happens, no matter how it shakes out, we're holding the spot for Robert Foster out of Pennsylvania, number one wide receiver in the nation. So you talk about moving Eddie back. What happens if we get Robert Foster in this incoming class?
Well, it'd be great. I mean, he's a great player. And I think there's a chance. I think there's a chance that happens. But I think we're seeing this year that you can never have enough good receivers, just like we're seeing you can never have enough good running backs. You touched on that earlier when you talked about skill positions on offense. But I don't know that us getting Robert Foster or not would affect where Eddie Williams plays next year so much as it would affect that it would give us a chance to get some more safeties. Robert Foster's a great player. The key to getting Robert Foster – is, you know, convincing his mom that the distance is not going to be that bad of a thing. And there's nobody better at those type of convincing talks than Nick Saban. And I understand that that Mike Groh has done an excellent job of recruiting Robert and you know, trying to I think his time has gone on and the relationship between Coach Groh and Robert Foster has deepened, that Robert is starting to see the light about not letting distance make his decision for him. I think there's a chance. Thomas, go ahead.
I think we hear less about Robert Foster because of distance, because he's, you know, we've got better access to some of the high school coaches closer to home, and so the rumor mill tends to feed us a little better from those sources. And the fact that Robert's up there in Pennsylvania, maybe we get less info. So it seems to me like his recruitment has been quiet, but I think it's been widely known for some time now that he basically it's a two-horse race. It's Pitt and Alabama. And I've got to like the fact that Pitt right now is sitting at 2-4, and they've dropped, you know, they Youngstown State beat them, for crying out loud. You don't lose to Youngstown State if you're Pitt.
Well, I think you could say it's a two-horse race, but because of the area and because of the interest, I wouldn't count out Ohio State. Urban Meyer has Ohio State going. Braxton Miller is an outside-the-box Heisman candidate, which I don't want to get into right now. And Meyer is going to recruit lights out. You know, what did he do the first 6 months he was on the job? He pissed the entire Big Ten off because he was like, oh, your best recruits, they're mine, and there's nothing you can do about it. So with Foster, I'd love to get him, another big body. But in my mind, yes, he says Alabama and Pittsburgh, but I wouldn't count out Ohio State just because of proximity and the fact that Meyer is there.
Listen, when you lose to Youngstown State, you got whooped by a sissy. And didn't, I mean, they lost 31-17. I mean, that's not like a Youngstown State eked it out. And sitting at 2-4, I'm liking our chances with that young man. And boy, you talk about an embarrassment of riches. If Chris Black comes back from the injury healthy, fully healthy, and I would be very curious, Kerry, if we've heard any kind of update on the prognosis for DeAndre White. Do we expect DeAndre to come back 100%? Because the wide receiver core next year just slapped filthy.
Well, I think we expect him to come back 100% before the season next year, yes. I don't think he'll go through the spring in full contact. I don't think he'll get tackled at A-Day or anything like that. But I certainly think he'll be 100% by August. I don't have any reason to think that he won't be. So, yeah, I think we're good to go with the Andrew getting back 100%. Some of these guys are going to redshirt, though. I don't care how good they thought they are coming out of high school. Some of them are going to redshirt. You know, I'm sure Marvin Shin and Danny Woodson Jr., neither one thought they'd redshirt. But, you know, when you have an embarrassment of riches at a position, you can afford to do things like that. So as good as Robert Foster is, it's not a done deal that he'd be playing in the first game. He might.
No.
He might, but I'm
shocked.
You know, you just never know. Alabama's, you know, at certain positions are getting loaded. At certain positions, they still need to do some stocking, particularly the offensive line. But, it's just going to come down to can Nick Saban and Mike Groh convince Robert Foster that distance shouldn't be a factor in where he goes to school, because he's listening. And if they can get his mom down there for a visit like they're trying to do, I really like the chances. And the same is true for Tony Connor. His mom hasn't been to Alabama yet. When she does and gets to sit in Coach Saban's office and watch that remote control door and all that kind of stuff, I think Alabama will, you know, be able to turn the heat up on that a little bit too. It's going to be a great top five class. I can't promise you'll be the number one class. I don't know that it will. A couple of upsets would have to happen at the last minute, like a Robert Kendiche having a change of heart or something like that. But it's certainly a top, at least I'm going to say top three or four class this year at worst. And you really can't ask for that much. You can't say, oh, we have to be number one in every poll every year in recruiting. If you got a top five class, all right, we got the guys on campus beginning with Scott Cochran and continuing through up the ladder through Nick Saban that will coach them up and get them to where they need to be. So it really looks good.
All right. Well, the last thing, we'll close out recruiting. You said we've got to stock up on the O-line. We need bodies and we need talent. Everybody we've talked about, Von Bell, Tony Connor, Robert Foster, all five-star rated kids, and we have a legit shot at all of them. Let's finish out with the last five-star kid, number four rated recruit in the country, according to 24/7 Sports. Do you think we end up with Laramie Tunsil?
I feel good about it because of the fact that Derrick Henry is doing such a great job on him. I would compare it to the job Ryan Anderson did on T.J. Yeldon last year. Derrick Henry's getting to be one of our lead recruiters. He's already working on a guard, and Thomas will have to help me with the guy's name. He's already working on a guard from Mississippi that's a junior this year, a 14 kid. So Derrick Henry is on top of things. Yes, I feel good about Tunsil. I realize Georgia offers playing time maybe a little quicker, but as good as Laramie is, I don't think he would have a problem getting some quality playing time, much like Cyrus did. Cyrus did in redshirt, and Laramie is among that breed of player. So I feel good about him.
Let's look back on the last decade of Bama football. We've signed some pretty high-profile offensive linemen. The number one offensive lineman of all the high school kids in the country, number one, Andre Smith was number one, and Cyrus was number one. So if you were to compare Laramie to one of those two kids, whose game does he favor more, Cyrus or Andre?
Andre, in my opinion. But it's close. I mean, Cyrus is more of a svelte, sleek guy. And I think Laramie has a combination of some of the better attributes of DJ Fluker and some of the better attributes of Andre Smith. Now, that being said, until his second year in the NFL, Andre Smith never decided to get serious about maintaining his weight. I'll never forget a reporter at an open press conference asking Nick Saban if Andre Smith was one of the leaders on the team, and Nick Saban responded without batting an eye, "If by leader you mean we have to lead him to the scales every Monday and weigh it in to see if he met his goal that week, then sure, he's a leader." But that's not the impression I get on Laramie Tunsil. I think Laramie's already got it going on as far as physical conditioning and maintaining his height-weight ratio that they need for an offensive lineman, that kind of thing. I don't think Laramie's going to be that guy they have to lead to the scales every Monday. But his game reminds me more of Andre's. It's interesting with Cyrus. He was probably a better pass blocker than run blocker when he got to Alabama. DJ is still a better run blocker than pass blocker at his fourth year on campus. So I think that Laramie has some of the best qualities of those two guys. But if I compare him more to one of the two between Cyrus and Andre, I'll go Andre.
Well, and I would say the same with that. It's very interesting that you mentioned Derrick Henry's ability, because Rivals, I'll give them a little plug, they ran a story that Henry has basically become one of the vocal leaders, not only in Laramie Tunsil's recruitment, but with other people as well. I'm not going to name drop because I don't want to steal their content, but it's very encouraging for me personally that with Derrick Henry on board, it's basically almost been a 24-hour turnaround. The 24-hour rule was instituted. He committed. He had a great game on ESPNU a couple weeks ago, and then he just started recruiting for Alabama. And, you know, you say that I agree completely with Laramie Tunsil, and it will be interesting to see who else Derrick Henry might be able to sway, because it's getting to that part of the season where all-star games are starting to come out. Alabama-Mississippi all-star game rosters were just released recently. And, you know, Under Armour All-America game, et cetera, et cetera. So definitely some stuff there. And to help you out, Kerry, you asked for the name. The Mississippi guard you were talking about that Derrick Henry is trying to recruit is a fella by the name of Roderick Taylor.
Correct. That's him. I just had to hear the name. That's what I'm talking about. He's a 2014 kid, but Derrick already knows about him because Derrick's got his nose to the grindstone of Alabama recruiting's machine.
Well, we're talking earlier about that 2008 class. He may have never made a huge contribution on the field, but boy, old B.J. Scott had a huge impact in recruiting other kids. I mean, he was as dynamic a recruiter for the Alabama Crimson Tide in that cycle as any member of our staff was, and it was a huge influence. And this class, it certainly does not lack leadership or character, but it has lacked that vocal, dynamic recruiter amongst the recruits themselves. And it looks like Derrick Henry's going to be that guy. He's going to be the B.J. Scott of this class.
That's a fair statement.
You know, interesting you bring up B.J. Scott. Since I'm down in Mobile, I've become acquaintances with Tommy Hicks, who is the press guy that covers South Alabama down here. And a lot of his stuff raves about B.J. Scott's ability to be a leader as South Alabama transfers into FBS. So even though Scott didn't ever really pan out at Alabama, he's had a college career, in my mind, from what I read and understand, that has been a positive influence not only on himself, but on what amounts to a very new football team doing something that is very difficult to do, and that is moving into competitive FBS, even if it's just in the Sun Belt.
You know, I think much like, because his fingerprints on that 2008 recruiting class are undeniable, much like most Alabama fans wished Phillip Sims well when he transferred back to Virginia, and you know, I think everybody kind of went, "Cool, the chances of us playing Virginia are almost zero." So, hey, go Cavs! You know, I'll pull for Virginia while he's there. Hope he does well. Wish him nothing but luck. I think most Alabama fans wish B.J. Scott nothing but luck because of the positive influence he had on that recruiting class, and are glad to hear that kind of feedback from his time with that South Alabama squad. That's an interesting story in and of itself. I know we're coming up on a break here pretty soon. I would love to hear some of the statistical breakdown as far as who played. And, Kerry, I don't know if you've got the participation, say that three times fast, the participation chart. I don't know if you've got that ready to rock. And, Thomas, I know you've got some additional insight as far as prep for Tennessee. So Bert, if you're ready, why don't we roll into a break? It's 9:30. We've got another half hour before Legend comes on, and you're listening to BAMS Radio. Would love to hear from you guys. Thomas, if you can throw that number out real quick, and then Bert will take us to break.
Sure. If you want to call in and join in the conversation, give us a holler at 714-510-3707. You get to hear from me, being the happy screener.
BAMS Radio. BAMS Radio. We're not your average sports talk show. All Bama, all the time. Bringing the lumber for Alabama sports.
I was going to get a Sunbelt on here. Hang on.
So, what makes BAM's tailgate so darn special?
Sunbelt Inflatable Tents can supply you with custom-designed tents for your tailgate needs. Corporations, businesses,
or just the most hardcore fans are the customers of Sunbelt Inflatable Tents.
Reach them at their website, www.sunbeltinflatabletents.com, and ask for Billy. Or call 251-247-1169 to order.
In the hallway and be ready to smash my helmet into the sides of the walls and again, my teammate thunderstruck by the Pipers. I think, where are we going with this, Flip? You guys going to do commits or what?
Thomas mentioned briefly that he had a little basketball intel, and heaven forbid that leak onto Legends Island, so let's get that out of the way now.
Well, I think that was actually Kerry. He's got a basketball.
It was Kerry.
Oh, was it Kerry? I'm sorry.
It's a hot potato. It's yours now, Kerry. Go ahead.
Well, thank you so much. It's more like a pumpkin. But the basketball announcement I have is that a lot of fans enjoy watching the team play or play against each other before the season actually starts. And I was hoping to hear soon about a potential scrimmage, a red and white type scrimmage at Coleman Coliseum. On the afternoon of the Mississippi State game, and was able to confirm today, even though UA hasn't announced this yet, was able to confirm through the secretary, Brenda Holt, at the basketball office that there will be a scrimmage at 3 o'clock, lasting till around 4:30, an open scrimmage to the public. In fact, they really want the public to come, and that will be from 3 to 4:30 on the 27th of October, prior to the Mississippi State football game. So I know we have a lot of listeners that are also basketball fans, and I myself cannot wait to see Devontae Pollard dunk in Coleman Coliseum, even against his own teammates. So I hope to see as many people as possible at that scrimmage. Also, Juwan Johnson, a shooting guard from the Memphis area, is getting very close to committing. He's pretty much down to Alabama, Florida, and Marquette. And Marquette got involved kind of late, so I seriously consider it to be an Alabama-Florida battle. And it looks like Alabama has got the lead on Juwan Johnson. He may be the third and final member of the fall signing class. So look for a commitment to Alabama is what I'm predicting in the next 4 or 5 days from Juwan Johnson, the shooting guard from Memphis. What I wanted to do next, if it's okay with you gentlemen, as we wait for Marty to call in and ask about the participation chart, is just go over very quickly, not the 80-minute segment I did last week on stats, but just very quickly some stats that jumped out from current Alabama commitments from their high school games this Friday night, this past Friday night, if I could. And I will make this as quick as possible. Anthony Averett of Woodbury, New Jersey, threw two third-quarter touchdown passes and added a 10-yard touchdown run in a victory over Haddonfield. Cooper Bateman has gotten hot. Started off the season a little slow, getting hot now. He accounted for 4 touchdowns. He scored on runs of 1, 2, and 6, and threw a 23-yard scoring pass in a win over West Jordan. Now, Leon Brown is a guy that people are really counting on to come in and push for the right tackle job. He's a junior college player in Brooklyn. He helped his team run for 183 yards. Raheem Falkins, wide receiver, New Orleans, didn't have a catch, but that's because the game got out of hand early, 58-0. Derrick Henry continued his great season, 196 yards, 3 touchdowns, and a loss to First Coast. Grant Hill, an offensive lineman from Huntsville, helped his team rush for over 180 yards. Now, here's the big one here. O.J. Howard had missed about a month for Otago Academy in the Prattville area. He came back and caught 3 passes for 71 yards and 3 touchdowns, nice ratio, ran the ball 4 times for 64 yards out of the Wildcat, and had 8 tackles and also ran back 2 punts for a total of 68 yards in the win over the Lounge. So great comeback game after a month absence due to a slight knee injury for O.J. Howard. He seems to be just fine. Tyron Jones, Marietta Walton, his team had a bye. Walker Jones, youngest of the Jones brothers, Germantown, Tennessee, Evangelical Christian. He had a rushing touchdown out of the Wildcat, caught a 2-point conversion, although he's projected as a linebacker. We don't have his tackle totals from this game. Altie Tenpenny had 250 total yards and 4 touchdowns. He ran 16 times for 104 yards, ran a kickoff back 98 yards for a touchdown in a win over Searcy. Altie plays for North Little Rock. And Ardarius Stewart, a guy I scouted earlier this year from Fultondale, he ran the ball 24 times for 202 yards, 5 touchdowns. He is a quarterback on his team. He was 2 for 7 for 69 yards passing and a touchdown and had an interception on defense. So that's a quick rundown of the current commitments and how they did in their games under the Friday night lights. This week I will be writing up a report for BamaMag.com and Scout.com on the Prattville at Oak Mountain game here in the metro Birmingham area. Austin Golston, an offensive lineman who's a senior at Prattville, remains a firm commitment to Florida State, but he is apparently strongly considering an official visit to Alabama. So I'm going to look into that situation, as well as get an update on junior running back Cameron Petway of Prattville, who is 6'2", 225, and runs about a 4.49 40. So that's kind of where we are in recruiting right now. What's your guys' theory on all those numbers?
That would be a juicy story if we got back in serious contention on Golson.
Yeah, I don't know where we stand, but he's apparently at least going to take an official visit to Alabama and maybe even to Auburn. But he still remains firm in his commitment to Florida State, and they're expected to sign him. I'm not making a whole lot out of it, but you know, I enjoy watching Prattville play, and even though they're having kind of a down year, the fact that they're coming to Birmingham made it kind of convenient. And there are other prospects on that team as well that I'll be writing about in my report Friday night on BamaMag.com, as well as a couple of prospects on Oak Mountain who may or may not be upper-level SEC guys but are still guys that can play at the next level.
Nice. Well, I want to go back, if I can, to Juwan Johnson, because it's – go back to Trevor Lacey's recruitment and remember how Alabama fans were just losing their doo-doo over this kid. I mean, it was a big-time signing. It was a huge need for the Crimson Tide's basketball team, and high-profile kid in-state, you know, really a must-get for Coach Grant, and he succeeded. He did sign with Alabama and played pretty well for us last year. Juwan Johnson is a similar prospect, different in that he's not in-state, so we don't have that intense focus. But this is also a top 50 ESPN shooting guard that would give us that nice depth in that 2/3 position. And the angle on this is that, you know, Florida, Marquette, Alabama, you look at that and you go, wow, that's a pretty healthy variety.
Let me correct myself, Lip. I did not mean to say Florida. It's Miami, Marquette.
That's
my bad.
Even further.
I had a blank part there.
So you couldn't get much different as far as what the schools offer. Obviously, three good programs. He probably feels like he can't lose whatever he chooses. But now, you may know the story better than I, Kerry. Is it his uncle or his brother or his half-brother, but a close relative of his plays for the Atlanta Hawks?
Don't know that one.
I want to say it's his uncle.
I mean, I know the point guard for Kentucky brother that guy's already gone now, though. That was last year's Kentucky point guard. His brother plays for the Hawks. I'm not sure about Juwan. Are you talking about Joe Johnson?
No. No, it's a different last name. I'll see if I can dig it up and find it out. But it's, you know, his mama lives in Memphis. His uncle lives in Atlanta and plays for the Hawks. You know, it's about a 3-hour drive to Memphis, 3.5, depending on how leaded your foot is. About a 2-hour drive to Atlanta. If family is going to play any kind of role in this, then it's got to be the Crimson Tide. And you look at who we've already got signed up for this class with Shannon Hale, who is, you know, a 3, probably a 4. He's a big. And Jimmy Taylor, who's going to be, you know, he's a 6'10" kid going to play the 4 or the 5. We need a shooter in this class, and I think he's a perfect fit. All indications are that from a character standpoint, he's exactly the kind of kid that Anthony Grant likes and could gel very, very nicely into what's already an outstanding class. But, boy, tip of the hat big time to Anthony Grant and the job that he has done. A lot of people felt pretty intense disappointment when the situation with Cat Barber went the way that it did. And people going, oh, God, we're going to have to scramble to find a guard in this class. And you know, if we have to scramble and end up with a top 50 kid, that's big time. That's
it
big,
is,
big
and
time.
I would not punch the panic button just yet on not getting a point guard in this class. Alabama was able to get involved with a point guard from Georgia that committed to LSU, and they were able to get involved with another point guard, I think he's from Illinois, named Rashid Jordan, but they're not going to get him. The next point guard target, and I'm so happy to know that Winona has a game at Hoover this year, the next point guard target in 2014, a junior by the name of Justin Coleman at Winona High School right here in Birmingham. That's the guy that Alabama is focusing on as its next point guard signee. I don't expect there to be a point guard in this fall class, but Justin Coleman of Winona, a dynamic junior player who I cannot wait to see in person when they play Hoover at Hoover this year. So look for him to sign if Alabama gets him in the fall of next year. So no need to panic. There's still plenty of point guards out there, and it looks like it could be an in-state guy that comes in and gets groomed to possibly replace Trevor Relaford. And also, if you come to the scrimmage, concentrate on Retton Abasahan, who redshirted last year, because Retton has learned the point guard position He's played it for the Belgian national team. He's playing it for the Alabama scout team, or was. So watch for Retton and see how he does, because that's who Trevor Relliford will be going against probably during the scrimmage, guarding one-on-one and guarding and conversely him guarding Trevor. So watch Retton to see how much he's improved. I've watched Retton shoot the ball before, and I'm going to tell you what, if you ever get to a game early and watch Retton come out, he just hits NBA threes like there was nothing to it. Now, does that mean he can dribble and pass and all that? Not necessarily, but those who watch practice say that Retton Abasaham will be just fine as the backup. And I'll say this, too, one of the backup point guards last year was Trevor Lacy. He demonstrated he could play that position. And, you know, there's a walk-on from Hoover who actually played his freshman year at Marsh Brown, and he was declared ineligible academically mid-season last year. He did play in some games before the break last year. Watch out for Keon Blackledge, a walk-on from Hoover, who is now eligible again. And he can actually shoot the heck out of the three-pointer. He was one of the top three-point shooters in the conference that Morris Brown plays in as a true freshman. So watch out for Keon Blackledge as a walk-on, and watch for Retton as a backup point guard. Now, Keon is a two-guard. I'm not trying to say he's a point guard, but you know, there, and with only 10 guys on scholarship, there's going to be a walk-on that's going to have to step up. And I've been able to identify two or three of the walk-ons on the team so far, but the one I expect to play most to be Keon Blackledge.
Well, I'm glad to hear you mention Retton, because I think that I've watched a lot of film on him. I haven't seen him play this year. I haven't seen the progress that he's made, but he's one of those kids that you just think could really make a significant contribution, because the last thing you want to see is for us to do what we had to do with Ronald Steele at the point guard. You don't want to ride Trevor and have to play him 38 minutes a game. So we've got to have somebody that we can get 8 to 12 minutes a game out of, and quality contributions at the point. And Retton might be that guy. So I think we've got Marty on hold on the phone lines. We'll open up to any calls that you guys want to fire our way. Obviously, we've already pretty much established that we'll be in Miami and pull the trophy home for the national championship in football. Maybe a Sweet 16, Grade 8 run in basketball, and then we'll just do it all again next year. I'm kind of feeling amped, kind of, you know, doing the bull dance, feeling the flow here. So, Bird, do we want to take a break, or we just want to go straight to Marty?
Mute here. I say we go straight to Marty, Blip. Let's get Marty on with us.
Marty, you're live with us. Good to hear from you this evening. How's it going?
It's going good. How's the four wise men doing tonight?
Is he talking about us? I don't know.
Yes.
Far over my house, man.
Well, the three wise men and Carrie the dumbass are doing pretty good. Roll Tide, Marty.
Well, Roll Tide, and enjoying another great season, I tell you. Just wallowing in the crimson, just feeling good. You know, what are we going to look like if we put a complete game together this year? It's going
like
to be a scary looking team.
Like the Missouri game before the rain delay?
It would be something to watch that you could just put down in your scrapbook and have forever. A question I got: what's the deal with Centermore? What's he so butt hurt about Alabama and talking bad about Saban for? You heard much about that?
I actually heard that interview on the way over here tonight. I heard about 2 minutes worth of it. He's mad because he was pretty much asked to leave the Alabama program. Him and you know, I probably shouldn't even say this on the radio, but what the hell? Him and two other players. I guess I won't name them because they're not running their mouths right now, shot off some fireworks in Bryant Hall a couple of years ago, and that really ticked off Saban. Now, that's not the only transgression Darrington had in Tuscaloosa. There were some other things, but that was the main one. He got put on thin ice by doing that. And none of those three guys are on the team anymore. All of them are playing elsewhere. But bottom line is he's mad because he had to leave. He's mad because Nick Saban didn't speak to him every time he saw him in the hallway at the football building. And let me tell you, he doesn't speak to the secretaries either. It was a great point made by Thomas Watts about an hour ago that you kind of have to earn that respect from Saban. Now, he spoke to me in the parking lot of the movie when we went to see Batman a few years ago, but that was away from football.
Hello. But anyway, Darrington's just mad about that, Marty. And if we spend too much time talking about Darrington, I won't have time to give you your participation chart.
Well, I just wanted to jump in before you get into that. There was actually, I think it was Nico Johnson that said, and you know, Nico Johnson, the guy who's now starting, who's been a contributor for years, Coach Saban didn't know my name. He called me by a number for like a year.
Yeah, that's Saban.
That's
his personality.
Saban. It's not that Nick Saban's a jackass for no reason. It's that's how he works. That's how he operates.
Great point. So, Marty, without you even having to ask me, I'm ready to give you the participation chart for the Missouri game. And I want to tell you straight up that the rocket scientists that are in charge of doing the participation chart on road games are not as good as the guys we have at Bryant-Denny that do it, okay? They, and I'm going to make a great point, they don't list Kelly Johnson as a starter on the participation chart. Guess what? He caught a 3-yard pass on the first play of the game. I'm pretty sure he started. But anyway, I know that he started, and I know that Kevin Norwood did not. So let me give you the Kerry Clark, CC Bama version of the participation chart. Left tackle, Cyrus Quanjo. Left guard, Chance Wormack. Center, Barrett Jones. Right guard, Anthony Steen. Right tackle, DJ Fluker. Tight end, Michael Williams. Quarterback, A.J. McCarron. Running back, Eddie Lacy. Wide receivers, Amari Cooper and Christian Jones. H-back, Kelly Johnson. They list Kevin Norwood as a starter. He came off the bench, trust me, against Missouri. Played a lot, but he came off the bench. Defensively, Ed Stinson at end, Jesse Williams at nose, Damian Square at end, Sam linebacker Adrian Hubbard, middle linebacker Trey DePriest, Will linebacker Nico Johnson, so the best linebacker on the team did not start that particular game, C.J. Mosley, Jack linebacker Xavier Dixon, cornerback Deion Ballou, cornerback D. Milner, safety Robert Lester, safety Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. The reserves were the aforementioned Kevin Norwood, John Fulton, Nathan McAllister came in late as a wide receiver. Tanae Patrick, Cody Mandel, Benny Sunseri, T.J. Yeldon, Carson Tinker, Jeremy Shelley, Blake Sims, Kenny Bell, Cyrus Jones, Jeffrey Pagan, Philip Ely, Bradley Silv, Kenyon Drake, Reggie Ragland, Jonathan Atchison, Brent Callaway, Jabril Washington, Geno Smith, Landon Collins, Nick Perry, Denzel Duvall, C.J. Mosley, who had another great game and has been named a Defensive Player of the Week every week this year by our coaching staff. Tyler Hayes, Cade Foster, LaMichael Fanning, we talked about him and his stunt the first hour, DJ Petway, Brandon Ivory, Kellen Williams, backup offensive lineman, Ari Quanjo, Chad Lindsey, backup offensive lineman, Austin Shepherd at backup right tackle, Marvin Shin, who got in, as I predicted last week, he got into the game while it was still in doubt at wide receiver. Harrison Jones came in at H-back late and led the blocking on the touchdown that was scored by Kenyon Drake. Brian Vogler, Malcolm Faison, and Darren Lake. 62 guys, not as high as has been in some of the other games and not as high as you'd expect in a route, but bear in mind they can't travel but 70, and three of those 70 that are traveling with them are already designated to redshirt. Kicker Adam Griffith, offensive lineman Big Shank Alphonse Taylor, and Eddie Williams, who we talked about in the first hour that I wish would move back to offense, but Eddie's redshirting. So that's really only they could have played 67, and you have to think that, you know, of the five that didn't play that could have, some of them might have been a little bit banged up or just maybe not a situation arose where they could work them into the game. So that's how it went against Missouri, Marty.
Is that the first time Fannin's really come in to do anything, or has he been in there before?
He's been in some games. It's the first time he's made that noticeable of a tackle. But I don't think – I don't have the stats right in front of me. I don't think that was his first tackle of the year. I think he got in on one or two, say maybe Florida Atlantic or Western Kentucky. But, yeah, he's gotten in three or four games this year.
That dude's a real man.
Oh, he's
Fanning has played in I've got it right in front of me, just bear with me here. Fanning has played in five games this year. He's credited with three solo tackles and one assist for a total of four tackles on the season.
Let me tell y'all a funny story about LaMichael real quick. Every time that pro scouts come to Alabama's practice, the first question they ask Nick Saban is, who the heck's that number 44? He looks better than some guys we got on our rosters right now. He's so cut. I mean, he's like 6'8", 300, it's all muscle. They just got to harness it. They've got to harness it. And I'm going to tell you something. When the light comes on, you ain't going to want to be the guy blocking the Michael Fanning in the next couple of years.
That was what was said about him coming out of high school. I remember, you know, raw talent, but upside out the wazoo, almost like Adrian Hubbard. Adrian Hubbard was very raw, but he's developed very well. But anyway, Marty, I'm sorry I cut you off. What were you saying?
No, I just say that it's exciting to, if that boy develops, man. I don't say a boy, that man develops. I tell you what, it's going to be something pleasant to watch on Saturday.
Is he potentially our pass rusher to be? Is he the kid that could? Because you know that's one of the things you hear consistently from the talking heads is that the one thing Alabama lacks is a true quote unquote pass rusher. I'll pose that to all you guys.
Well, I think he's more of a combo run stopper and pass rusher. I think the pass rushers to be are going to be Adrian Hubbard and Xavier Dixon.
I agree with Hubbard and Dixon. And if Alabama were to land a Robert Kimdichie, that would be kind of the next guy in just because his upside is so high.
Well, don't sleep on Ed Stinson. I mean, the leading sack getters so far in the season have been Hubbard and Stinson.
Ed's a great player. He's one of those guys that it really warms your heart to see, because number one, he's a nice guy. But number two, he works his behind off. He does everything they ask him to do, whether it's the weight room, the practice field, the classroom, whatever. And Ed has gotten better every year that he's been there. So, yeah, that's a great point. Ed will be one of the pass rushers that will step up, maybe even later this year. I think the Alabama's pass rush will be just fine.
I got a question for Thomas.
What you got?
Hey, Thomas, is there any truth to the rumors running around that D-liner for Auburn is looking around and maybe you'd be looking at Alabama? Or is that just message board material?
I'm not 100% sure on that. For the fans that don't know, D-liner out of, Kerry, correct me if I'm wrong, Muscle Shoals, Alabama?
That's correct. That's correct.
He's five-star defensive end commit for Auburn, and there have been rumors that he is looking around. He is not extremely happy with Auburn's season. I can't really blame him. The thing I've heard is, will Alabama take him? Will Nick Saban accept a commitment from him simply because he has had an interesting past couple of months as a high school senior? He broke into a community pool and got arrested for that. And that was, you know, ha-ha, high school prank. Apparently it's a tradition. Still, it is breaking a law. And he also got arrested for basically screaming at a police officer who had pulled his mother over. So there's kind of an interesting, somewhat checkered past with the young man. And it's going to come down to, does Alabama want to take someone that could be a problem child? And it's interesting you bring up Auburn's recruiting class, because I wanted to get Kerry's take on this, and I apologize for stealing your thunder here, Marty. Reuben Foster visited LSU for the LSU-South Carolina game. What do you think about that one, Kerry? Because that's a real interesting situation as it continues to develop.
Well, and also Reuben Foster's best friend is Trey Matthews, and he's a firm Georgia commitment. He's convinced that he can Trey is convinced he can convince Reuben to sign with Georgia on National Signing Day. But just the fact that he's taking visits ought to raise a few people's eyebrows. I don't think he's 100% done to Auburn. But going back to Marty's question and your comment, my understanding is that Alabama is trying to get D-Liner to take an official visit and that he is probably going to take one after the season. Now, whether or not a firm, committable offer occurs on that visit, I can't say, but I have reason to think that it is a possibility. I think there's zero chance that any other current commitment to Auburn ends up in Tuscaloosa, but I think that there is a chance. I'd hate to put a number on it. Just to be lazy, I'll say 50-50 that D-Liner ends up in Tuscaloosa. I think he is the only one with the potential to end up there that's on Auburn's current list. I do think there's a chance Reuben Foster could sign with Georgia or maybe LSU, but I think Georgia's a more of a possibility. Georgia's been recruiting Reuben Foster since, like, the ninth grade. So – and Trey Matthews, who's a firm commit to them, is a very good friend of his. So that's my take on two of their biggest commitments.
I'll go ahead and round it out, and I'll say that in spite of people like Lucky from 24/7, and Lucky is well connected. Lucky would know. Lucky insists that D-Liner never fully closed the door on Alabama, even after his commitment to Auburn. That being said, if you follow the young man on Twitter, even in light of the poor performance on the field, D is still tweeting things like hanging with my boys, Reuben Foster, and mentions a couple of other, you know, Carl Lawson, a couple of other Auburn commits, and tweets war damn Eagle, you know, war Eagle anyway when they lose. So Lucky might be saying that he never closed the door, but the public voice that he's putting out there certainly points at sticking with that commitment to Auburn.
Yeah, he may. He may. That's fair. But well, Alabama's interested.
Well, I'd like to see one of them flip like that to somebody and then maybe open the plug up and let all the air out of that recruiting class that Auburn's having. Because they have put together a pretty mean recruiting class this year. I'm just hoping all of it don't hold together. And hopefully if this season keeps falling downhill like it is, maybe it will come to pass.
Well, and you mentioned that, and Carl Lawson, the other real gem of Auburn's class, has reportedly been looking around as well. So there are questions surrounding what you could call the big three of the Auburn recruiting class with Foster, Carl Lawson, and D-Liner.
Not to be rude, well, but does it make a difference? I mean, they've gotten great talent down there and squandered it, so who cares? And speaking of talent, it is now right up on 10 o'clock, which the pom-poms are put away for bands for this week, and we are about to embark upon Legend Island, unless my computer's absolutely crazy. And gentlemen are welcome to sit, or if you're welcome to run, but we are about to bring on the king of college football, the legend. So thank you for listening for the previous 2 hours. It's been a fun show, Kerry. Fun show, Thomas. Fun show, Mr. Blip. And we got the legend coming up. So,
Legend Island, the Mac Daddy of outlaw sports programs. If you want to talk Bama, Legend welcomes all island members with open arms, even if they are painted orange with feathers. Join the ever-expanding crew of sports crazies who are regular visitors to the Legend Island every Wednesday night on BAMS Radio. And now, it's time for Legend Island.
Welcome, America. Back again for another week here on the island. Standing out here in front of my 80-foot statue of Nick Saban, yes, 80-foot tall. The lights are shining. 15 rings on his finger as we get ready to talk some more Alabama football. What a game this past weekend in the rain in Missouri, a crimson storm, one of the most awesome running attacks I have seen in a long time by any team. T.J. Yeldon, Eddie Lacy, putting the thunder, putting the lumber, putting the water to Missouri behind the best line in the nation and possibly the best line to play in the SEC in many years. Welcome to the island tonight. Want to make a quick announcement. I will be at Backwoods Guns and Ammo tomorrow night. We'll be there all day signing autographs tomorrow. Yes, the legend, signing autographs. Who could believe it? But I will be there tomorrow signing autographs at Backwoods Guns and Ammo. That's in Spruce Pine, Alabama, located on the corner of 43 and 13. If you're up that way tomorrow, stop by Backwoods Guns and Ammo and yell at the legend. Bird, thanks for having me on the show tonight, brother. Welcome to the island.
Thanks for letting me come on the island. I'll tell you what, you'd laugh, Legend. I'm sitting in my Alabama sweatshirt. I've got an Alabama T-shirt on underneath it. I've got my Alabama hat on. And the only thing I don't have on that's crimson is underwear, and I don't need to go into that. But they are gray. They are gray, elephant gray. So, you know, I'm all bammed up. I'm ready to go. It is now officially the countdown to some butt-kicking with the UT Vols. I don't know how much of the previous segment you got to hear, but fun night, man. Kerry was bringing the lumber. Blip was bringing the lumber. Both of those guys, good input. Thomas is always the rock of the show. You know, it's been fun with the previous portion of the show. We're looking forward to the island now. And want to remind people to call in. You know, it's a lot more fun. We get to talk to you. So 714-510-3707. You got the legend ready to host you and tell us what you think about Tennessee and Hate Week. And some of the listeners, I don't think, get it when we talk about Hate Week. And we, you know, maybe we should do a short history on why that bears such a significance to old farts like me and you, legend, that have been around the block so many times. Because it's the Tennessee game at one point was probably more important to Bama fans than the Auburn. Now, it was equally as important as Auburn has been over the years. But what do you think on that, man?
Well, you know, I still remember Peyton Manning leading the band.
In Legion Field.
Playing Rocky Top after the victory. I still remember Philip Fulmer ratting us out to the NCAA. This game, it might have lost a little luster because Tennessee has lost a little luster, but the hatred for Tennessee still runs very deep in my veins, Bird, and I bet it still runs very deep in yours.
No, I've got a reason for it too. And I went to a game at Neyland Stadium, and I think I've mentioned this on BAMS before, and was sitting down in the lower section with what I call, you know, the Bob Uecker seat, you know, basically eye level with the people in front of me that were standing on the field type of thing. And during the game, the Tennessee fans took it upon themselves to pepper me with oranges. And they'd hit me in the back of the head, in the back, you know, on the shoulders with oranges as the game would go on. And finally, I just stood up and turned around and looked at the section up above me, and I said, do it to my face, because I will take everyone in you section on. Let's go. And I told the cops, I said, you know, if I get hit again, I'm going to sue you. I'm going to sue the state of Tennessee. I'm going to sue, you know, the university. I mean, you as a police department, you as a security guy, because you are not protecting volatile objects, and I may be, you know, addled for the rest of my life. But, yeah, you know, I do. I hate Tennessee. I don't like the color. I don't like the stadium. I don't like the fans. I don't like the fact that they were kind of chicken shits and they would throw stuff with me, you know. Do it to my face. If you want to bow up with me, do it to my face. Don't do it behind my back. And I just don't hold cotton to people that do that. I'm too old for the legend. You know, it's like, I don't have a problem with somebody crossing swords with me, but, you know, you don't do it behind your back. Just come on up and be enough of a man and say, hey, Alabama, I hate your guts, and I'm going to hit you with an orange. Okay, hit me with an orange. I might shake your hand.
Well, I agree with you. I got no love for Tennessee. My grandfather, he passed away during the Philip Fulmer NCAA fiasco, and he was brokenhearted by it. He really felt like Alabama was on the verge of devastation, and I've never forgotten it. And it does my heart good to see the Auburn program and the Tennessee program in the condition that it's in today. It really does.
Me too.
Some people say they wish these teams were good. They wish Auburn was good. They wish Tennessee was good. The hell with that. I'm glad they're bad. I hope they lose every friggin' Saturday. I really do. The only time I pull for one of them is when they play each other. Then I wish it would end in a tie. Yeah. Got no love for them, Bert. No love. No love at all for them. No love. This team's got a couple weapons. You know, some people say this is the first time this year that the Alabama secondary will really be put to the test. Tyler Bray, Justin Hunter, and the other guy's name's slipping me right now, the punt returner, the kick returner that's so good too, the junior college receiver.
It's Cordero Patterson.
Cordero Patterson.
Yeah, there you go. Help me. Hey, my boy Thomas, how you doing tonight, brother? Welcome to the island.
I'm glad to be here. I just unloaded a case of Crown Royal, so let's start the party.
Oh, it's a party, brother. I just picked up some Bama Baca from the pink package store on Highway 280. I'm partying with you here on the island tonight. But I'd like to hear you, Thomas. Talk about these weapons of Tennessee, and let's get your perspective and breakdown.
Sure, absolutely. The Tennessee, let's start running game. Rajon Neal, the Tennessee starting running back, is dinged up, probably won't play. Tennessee hasn't ever shown to be a really good running team this season anyway, so what was a mediocre ground game took a big hit with Neal's being banged up. The bread and butter of Tennessee's offense is the fact that they have a quarterback that, if he doesn't melt down, can make all of the NFL throws, and has the talent to basically run a high-level, well-made offense. The knock on Tyler Bray is he's kind of a head case. If you watched the Tennessee-Florida game, as Florida continued to put it on Tennessee, Tyler Bray just started missing everything. He completed more passes to Derek Dooley on the sideline than he did to anyone else in the fourth quarter. It was that bad. I don't know who Alabama will get this week. I think he could. I think a lot of it will depend on the first quarter. If he can hit some early passes, maybe get a quick touchdown, you could have an engaged, focused, not head case Tyler Bray. But if Alabama comes out and punches Tennessee in the mouth, the game could turn ugly pretty quickly. I question the maturity of the Tennessee team as a whole. But aside from Tyler Bray, you also have Justin Hunter and Cordarrelle Patterson, two big-bodied upperclassmen. Cordarrelle is a JUCO transfer, and Hunter is originally from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hunter is projected by Todd McShay to be the number one wide receiver coming out in April in the NFL draft, and Cordarrelle has been compared favorably to Julio Jones. So there's definitely some wide receiver talent. The problems inherent to all this is, does Tyler Bray have the time or the inclination even to get them the ball? Alabama rushes blitzes from a lot of different angles, and even though the offensive line for Tennessee is pretty experienced, it's hard to maintain pass blocking for as long as might be necessary for a Justin Hunter or a Cordarrelle Patterson to shake a Dean Milner. So questions on the offensive side, but Carrie and I spoke about this earlier in the show. I think Tennessee will put up a few points. Now, when you go on the other side of the ball, Tennessee's defense, you have to say they've underachieved. Outside of 6'7", 6'8", 377-pound Daniel McCullers, who will be a monster on the inside, the rest of the defense has really underperformed. The linebackers were supposed to be exceptional, and outside of A.J. Johnson, they haven't been. Now, in Meggett's defense, I don't remember his first name, he has had injuries. But, okay, you've had injuries, so you haven't had a good season. That still means you haven't had a good season. Secondary's banged up, so I don't think Tennessee will be able to contain Alabama. The question becomes, does this game turn into a horse race where it's like Mississippi State 41-31, or does it turn into Alabama keeps scoring, Tyler Bray melts down, starts throwing interceptions, Neyland Stadium's crowd gets knocked out of it, and Alabama rolls? Short answer to that question, I don't know. But the chances of Tennessee winning are very, very slim. It would take one of those four interception, two fumble, defense forgetting how to play and tackle type games for Alabama not to win this game. But it's a road game in the SEC, and nothing is for sure. I apologize that I preached just now, but I had to get it all off my chest. I just poured myself a drink. What do you think, legend?
I have some of this Bama vodka, bro. That's good. I'll say this. Tennessee 3-3 on the year, 0-3 in the SEC. All three losses to ranked opponents. One area concerns me about this game. I think the passing game is a concern. I don't think it's as big as some people's making it out to be. But I'd like to get Bird's take on this. What about special teams? This Cordero Patterson, what kind of threat does he pose for this kick and punt return team, Bert?
I think it's their only threat. I think with what we've exhibited in the past, with the past games, our weak link is our special teams right now. You know, we've given up punt and kickoff returns for touchdowns. And, you know, right now it's, again, it's a question mark. I think we talked about it on Sunday night in the recap show that that nobody's scoring on our defense. Let's just put it that way. I mean, there's very few teams out there. There are have been very few teams out there that have put up any kind of numbers at all against our defense. And this defense is not being touted as one of the greats of all time, and it's too bad because, folks, they're great. They really are. This is a great defense. But where we – the one Achilles heel, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, is you know, but Tennessee is not going to score every time they touch the ball. And that's going to be few and far between. You know, out of the 41 points we score, that's how many kickoffs. You know, what's that, six kickoffs, something like that. They're not going to score, but maybe if they did on one or two of them. So, fine, let's give them their 14 points or their 10 points or whatever that they end up with. I'm going to say 14. And, but it's going to be a 41-14 or 44-14 game. If it's closer than that, I will be very, very, very surprised. But I think that our defense is, and like Thomas says, Mr. Bray is a little bit of a head case, and I'm not sure what intelligence factor he's got. And if you can't be a really, really good read quarterback, and you understand what I'm saying, a Peyton Manning pro type read quarterback, when you're under center or in the shotgun and see what is lining up against you on defense, you're going to get eaten alive. They're going to, and I see that happening this week yet again against Tennessee. If you don't think Saban has not got that secondary, and that's what everybody says, well, you know, they've got to get their secondary ready and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, not so much. I'm not really too worried about these guys, not too worried about the secondary, and not too worried about playing at Neyland Stadium. And what I would worry about is getting hit in the back with an orange.
Well, I'm with you completely because I've said all along this Alabama secondary is very good. I mean, anytime you put Sincere and Robert Lester and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and Nick Perry, you have four quality SEC safeties. And then I noticed that Dean Milner is the number one cornerback on Ty McShay's NFL draft board. So, I mean, you got the number one cornerback in the country, and you got two great safeties with a couple great backups. And I've really seen a lot of improvement out of Mr. Blue, Deion Blue on the other side of the ball. Like, he has really picked his game up. So while this is definitely a challenge to the Alabama secondary, I have a lot of confidence in this secondary. And I do think you're hit the head on nail on the head there, Bird. I think this defense is a little underrated. It may be one of the best defenses in a long time in the SEC, along with the 2009 and 2011 version. Saban's a machine. I worship as a statue. I worship. I mean, this is a good defense, brother.
I think it's a great defense. I don't think it's a good defense. I mean, the stat that hit me and Thomas remind me of the number again was what we held Missouri to rushing this past week.
How many?
1 yard. 1 yard, 3 feet.
Is that plus something?
No, we held Missouri to 3 yards rushing. They were negative up until the very end when the nacho guy and the cheerleaders got on the field for Alabama and Missouri got a couple of first downs on the ground.
We killed them.
That's pretty impressive right there. That's pretty. And Missouri is a good running team, too. They're not a bad running team.
No one has given Alabama defense the credit that they should be getting right now, either within the state or outside of the state. So, again, I'm going to go roll back the clock to 3 weeks ago when I said these guys have a streak of mean, And you saw that with the Fanning tackle. That's a streak of mean. And you know what? I jumped up out of my chair and waved my hands in the air like I was a what do they call the holy roller, man. I had the spirit in me, and I was ready to handle a snake and drink some lye. I was so excited. Well, listen, guys, we're right up on break. Let's go ahead and take a break. I've got two of my favorite callers of all time on hold. And you know what I'd kind of like to do is get both of those guys on at the same time. I've got Bring the Pain. I've got a good friend, Robert, from up in Iowa. And I'd like to see Pain and Robert on at the same time, because they're both dear friends and both good people. And it'd be kind of fun. It's up to you, though. Legend, do you think that's okay?
Oh, that sounds great, brother. That sounds great. Hey, before you go to break, let me remind everybody about Donut Joe. I got to get Bird down there on 3199 Lee Street. The best donuts in the state. Got to get you down there, Bird, for a box of them donuts.
You know what? I need some for the Tennessee game, so I may just roll down there and get some.
Do that. Just like, do that.
Get some ass this weekend. So let's take a break real quick, and you can take a deep breath, and then what we'll do is bring these guys on with us.
Let's do it.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. With Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice in fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands at a fraction of what other chain stores charge. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama, on Highway 31. Come see us or check out our website at www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com.
www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
You better get on the telegram. We need Bama vodka fast.
Daddy, who's those scary-looking bottles riding into town?
That's Frenchy V and his gang.
What American vodka is there that can challenge their French-made vodka?
Who's that coming, Daddy, to save us?
Bama.
That's Bama Smooth American Vodka. 80 proof Bama Vodka packs 6 distillations, and no one in the world can match his Alabama limestone filtration.
Oh, chocolate bleu, au revoir, Bama! Yeehaw! Look at those Frenchies scram!
We invite you to taste Bama Vodka and judge for yourself. Who makes the best tasting vodka in the world? Bama Smooth American Vodka. Product of USA, Solomon Spirits Corporation, Auburndale, Florida.
Back on the island with the Bird and my boy Thomas Watts. We're talking Tennessee, Alabama tonight. You're welcome to call in at 714-510-3707. We got two of the great sports callers of all time coming up. Talking about great, also going to get my boy Bird down at the Wing Out Sports Grill, 2417 3rd Avenue South here in Birmingham. Talk to my boy Derek. They got a legend special on the menu. Now go in and ask for the legend special at the old Grump location. Best wings I've ever eaten. Bird, bring on the two great callers that we have here tonight on the island.
Payne, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. And Robert, how about it?
Bring the Pain. How are you doing, my friend, Pain?
I'm doing all right, Robert. How about you?
I'm doing fine. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling all right.
So, Bring the Pain, what do you think about Alabama and Tennessee?
Well, I've been listening to what the guys were saying. I gave the score Alabama 45, Tennessee 10. Tom Brady is too scared in the backfield. He's going to be even more scared when he sees our big guys coming.
Oh,
he just gets rid of the ball too fast. He doesn't make his throws.
Go ahead, Robert.
Make his food and eat it too, man. They're gonna be hit them when they're not signed. Hit them if they're not signed, man. They're gonna be really poo in the. I look by my dad and nail Tennessee to that coffin, man.
Watch that Rudy Poo stuff now, Robert. Darryl from Georgia would be suing you for copyright.
Oh, I don't care what they will say. They will paint it up.
I tell you what, Tennessee opened their mouths too much this week. But what Billy's been saying about Nick Saban's recruiting and about one of our old players saying he wants to stomp Nick Saban's butt and his team by the way he was mistreated down at Alabama. He also was saying he's going to put his national championship ring up on eBay for sale. It was his fault he got in trouble and done things that he shouldn't have done. He put his foot in his mouth, and we gone him.
Did you go to grade school at the time that if you got in trouble, you got sent to the principal's office? Do you remember those days?
Oh, I remember those days. Because I was there almost every other day.
I know. Don't realize is that, you know, you don't just leave a football team because you've been a choir boy in class, you know. You get sent to the principal's office because you screwed up, because you're a screw-up. And that's what's happening with Centimore. And that's who we're talking about is Darrington Centimore. You know, he did a whole bunch of stuff while he was on campus that he shouldn't have done. And Saban doesn't tolerate that crap. Other schools do. He can go up and be, you know, a semi-superstar at Tennessee, but, you know, Tennessee is kind of in the crapper. The program's not that great, and the team is definitely on the back end of wins and losses. And he's where he should be, where they tolerate junk like that. Whereas at Alabama, you know, you have to toe the line. If you want to wear the ring, if you want to hold the crystal ball, the rules are you got to be in class and you can't be in the principal's office. And it's just simple as that. So, yeah, good point, guys. Now, I'm gonna challenge all four of you. Legend, don't know what you're doing this Saturday, but, of course, you're welcome if you want to come over to the cage. Robert and Daniel, I know that you guys are, you know, out of town. But what I would like to do, I would propose that all four of us get a knee-high belly washer, a knee-high orange soda, and before they kick off, when they're doing the kickoff, that all four of us at the same time. Are you guys in?
I'm in.
All right, I'll hold you to it. And it just has to be an orange drink. It doesn't have to be knee-high, but you can get a Gatorade orange or, hell, orange Kool-Aid. I don't care. But let's drink something orange and then by halftime be pissing it right down the commode. How about it?
I'm in on that.
Hey, Robert.
Count me in.
Thomas, you gonna join me on that? You can mix a little Crown.
Crown and orange? No, I do vodka and orange juice, if anything. If I'm drinking that evening, which I probably will. So I'll join in. Why not? Be fun.
I got some orange knee-high now. I'm fixing to mix it with my Bama vodka and see what it tastes like.
Oh, come on, guys. Y'all got to hit something hard. Mix it with Crown Royal. Jack Daniels. Damn bean.
There's my boy.
Like you, Brian.
Or Robert, you could take a cold beer and make Kool-Aid out of it. Orange Kool-Aid cold beer.
Oh, that would be. I don't know what it's gonna taste like, but I tried something new.
Hey, Dad, I got a question for y'all before I jump off of here. What about these rumors going around about how AJ McCarron might have to have surgery on his knee and stuff?
Yeah, I heard that too.
How about Thomas on that? I know he has a lot of sources. Thomas, what are you hearing about AJ McCarron, and what is his outlook for the BAM's listeners out there concerned tonight?
He's going to be fine. He's going to play. The thing that was reported was a meniscus tear, and that was very quickly shot down by his mother and a cousin on Twitter. AJ McCarron has practiced. He's in a brace, but I'm taking the attitude that until AJ McCarron is unable to play because of whatever injury, whether it be a slightly torn meniscus or something else, he's the quarterback, and I'm not going to worry about it. Now, he might have a slight meniscus tear, and that would be something that requires surgery. But they won't have that surgery until after the season, and it would be one of those little cleanup surgeries. Like, I have this little problem that is uncomfortable, but I can play on it. So I'll play through the season, but then I'll skip spring practice or I'll skip summer workouts to get it taken care of so that I can be ready to lead the football team next season. That is the absolute worst-case scenario for AJ McCarron as it stands, as it pertains to his knee. Other injuries, unreported stuff, I don't have any inside sources, and I'm not willing to speculate on a player's other injuries. The important thing is he's slated to start against Tennessee in Knoxville this Saturday, and be it 100%.
Unless I was asleep during this portion of the show, did not the MRI come back as negative? That basically it is not a meniscus tear. This has nothing to do with his mother and his sister. This has to do with the findings of the medical community that basically he's got a bruised knee.
Correct. That's what I've heard. I was just saying if there ends up being something that the MRI missed, which I'm not saying there is, it is at worst a problem that involves corrective surgery after the season, as it stands right now. So McCarron is fine.
A lot of players play with Thomas. I hear that NBA players play with this kind of thing for years.
NBA players I know have played with torn meniscus in their knee before, and that's a sport that uses the muscle more since you jump so much.
Anyway, I think you guys can rest easy. That was according to Clark from earlier show, a Saturday night on the strip or, you know, after they got back home, an offhand comment based on what the trainer said while on the field, that it got passed along in a bar setting and got picked up from there and then put into the press and blown just a bit out of proportion. I'm telling you, you can rest easy. He will be fine. And I think that we will dance through the season with our good friend AJ at the helm. So, gentlemen, sleep well tonight.
Yeah, I hope AJ is okay. Hey, I want let everybody know my girlfriend, Demo Parson, he put picture up on me on our trip on my Facebook page. If you go to www.facebook.com and search for Robert from Iowa, you will get all the pictures from my mom's trip.
So basically, to repeat, Robert, go to Facebook, and I think everybody knows how to get to Facebook. Just search for, up in the search tab, Robert from Iowa, and then your pictures from the trip to Alabama have been posted, and I will certainly after the show be up looking at them. So thanks for letting us know that. Well, guys,
now Rob, did you say your girlfriend put these up?
No, my friend from my friend he lived in Alabama.
Jimbo, you said your girlfriend. I said you finna break a lot of hearts in Alabama, brother.
I have Carla. Carla, you know Carla?
Yeah,
I know Carla.
Yeah. Seen my honey bunny.
Oh, see your honey bunny. I've seen them pictures of you and Carla. Y'all all snuggled up and everything.
Hey, this is Rob's dad.
Hey, buddy.
Legend?
Yes, sir. How you doing, my friend?
Good. Just a minute. Speaker right here. Hey, why don't you send me a couple more of those beers, man? I still hanker for the same thing. I never forgot that because, you know, where I was staying, it was kind of dry there, but I still snuck a stum around.
Well, boy. Hey, man, we was down there, and Robert's dad couldn't find a beer nowhere, so I took him around. And what was the name of that beer again? You remember?
No, I got a picture taken with two of them, and your wife helped me find one for me. And you were taking care of Rob, or you and him were celebrities there, and I just got the heck out of the scene, drank a beer.
Yeah, Angie went and got you a beer, I remember that. And he couldn't find a beer there, so I found one for him. It was like it was a dry county around there for a minute till he ran up on the legend, and then I know where whiskey and beer is. It seems to follow me.
Yeah, the legend took care of me. Hey, thanks a lot. I had a wonderful time there with you taking care of Rob and my wife and I, you and your wife. I appreciate it, Legend. Do you understand?
Yes, sir, I do. It was an honor to meet you and your wife. Y'all are such wonderful people. And me and Angie consider y'all family. We really do.
Yeah, well, you are my family, too. All except you tell that one guy that was over there underneath your canopy there that I need a couple of those beers coming from Santa Claus. Do you hear me?
I hear you, my friend. I hear you. I get you some, too. I promise.
Thanks again, my friend. I'll let you talk to Robin. God bless you and your wife.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You betcha.
That's Robert's dad, and his wife was down here, and Bird, you didn't get a chance to meet them, but oh man, you will love Robert's parents. They are such wonderful people. They really are amazing people.
Well, we've got a long season in front of us, and I'm looking forward to making their acquaintance. I've got Dan's mom, and so little by little, our family of BAM's listeners expands. So, but thanks for the call. The call, Daniel. We're going to take a real quick break on Legend Island, and you know, basically, we're going to get amped up for the game. We will talk to you gentlemen later. Thank you for calling, and you are listening to BAMS Radio.
Because it's Auburn, it's Legion Field, it's the weather. With all those unique circumstances.
You know, football games are not won with schemes. Football games are won with football players making plays.
Fourth and goal with a half a yard.
This just makes it perfect. This just makes it perfect. We're behind. They're all fired up. We got class. We're going to find it out. We got class, and I know we got it.
I don't think coaches put pressure on us, but, hey, the media was building it up, and that's where the pressure started. You really had to stay focused, stay on track.
Every single game that we played in, we felt that we were going to win that game. And that's what Alabama football is about, just winning.
3 plays that would make the difference. Whoever made the plays would win the game. But you never know when the play will happen.
Passes away, penalty flag down. Amar Thomas is on his way down the sideline. George Teague is after him and runs him down.
Takes the ball
away from him. Teague got the ball.
Welcome back to Let's Now.
Tide, roll, honey. Roll it, baby. Yes, Lord. Come on with your maroon and white. Bring on them big, deep Bama boys. Here we go, blow your whistle, girl. Yay, Alabama. Crimson Tide. Every Bama fan behind you, honey. Hit your stride. Go teach them old bulldogs how to behave. Send the yellow jackets to just a watery grave. And if the band sounds weak, well, tell them to play louder. Everybody got to do their part for Bama, honey. Fight on, fight on, fight on, men. Remember the Rose Bowl is in Pasadena. Yeah, roll for the victory. That's what I'm talking about. Get them, Bama, choke them down. Remember when Bear Bryant used to be on the Bama coach? I met him one time. He was a fine-looking man, too. He noticed me. He saw me over there shaking my booty for the alternative team. And he said, that looks just as good, girl. I said, all right now, hey. Go, go, Bama. Fight them hard. We love you. Yes, we do, Lord. Fight on, men. Remember, it's the Rose Bowl we're trying to win. Now, hell.
I hate Neyland Stadium. It looks like a garbage truck worker convention. And I hate all their quarterbacks. I hate Tennessee, man.
Legend, it's yours, baby.
Man, that's some funny stuff that guy talking right there. That's one of the most hilarious clips we play is his hatred for Tennessee. I didn't get to hear all that earlier. Thomas, why do you hate Tennessee so much?
Well, I'm not quite. I'm the young buck of the group, but my first major memory of Tennessee was the Albert Means, Philip Fulmer thing, and I didn't understand what happened. And once I did, it was just like, okay. And then the subpoena thing happened, and that made me very sad because the legal rigmarole they used to get out of that was ridiculous. So I'm just kind of like, no, Tennessee, I'm not going to be okay with you. Just no. Just stop. Go away. Don't like you.
You've never been back with your head with an orange, have you?
No, but I have considered sending you a basket of oranges just to mess with you.
Butterball is gone. Heavy week.
It's you know what? That's okay. I'll tell you what. One of these days, and it can't be this year, but one of these years, you and I, Rock, I'm going to take you up to Neyland Stadium and let them, you know, and something will happen. I mean, I will tell you right now that, you know, when you're with the bird, trust me, something will happen that you will be memorable, that you will for the rest of your life tell your children and grandchildren why you hate Tennessee.
Well, I do have a funny Neyland Stadium story. I was up there for a fraternal conference, and some crazy fool left Neyland Stadium wide open. So one of my fraternity brothers, who shall remain nameless, goes into the stadium and steals a phone receiver. So the running joke was someone's tried to call Neyland Stadium, but they can't hear it because we have their phone. That's why Tennessee continuously lost during the 2009, 2010, 2011 season.
Had nothing to do with Mount Cody at all, but that's cool.
No, it's all phone.
It's all phone. Whatever melts your butter. That's funny, though. That's a great story. So you've never been up there?
Go ahead, Bird.
I was asking Thomas, so you've never been up to Neyland Stadium?
I've been up to it. I've never been in it. It was during the off season when I had this, when I went to this conference. I'm not sure I want to go to a game in Knoxville. The area doesn't appeal to me, and I just no. And that damn color.
You have to go so that we can, number one, make you a perennial fan of Kraft mac and cheese, because it is the mac and cheese crew. You know, and I like Kraft mac and cheese, but every time I stare at a bowl of that, I think it's Tennessee. But yeah, you got to go. I mean, it's one of the.
Thanks, I think.
Bird is on fire with this Tennessee stuff. Bird is on fire with this Tennessee stuff. Hey, it's being reported tonight on Twitter that AJ McCarron's family members are claiming that all rumors are false of anything torn in AJ McCarron, that he will be 100%. So I think a lot of haters out there wishing this was true, but I think AJ is a very durable quarterback. He ain't the kind of fella to get hurt, and probably the kind of fella I believe that would play through a lot of pain. You see the same thing, Bird, or am I missing the mark here?
Oh, he's strapped on a damn brace, step back on the field, and during, you know, he's got a severe bruise, people. It's that the MRI can, you know, basically confirm that. He doesn't have anything torn in his knee. He took a lick, he bruised his knee. They put a brace on him. He stayed mobile through the end of the game, you know, doing the exercise, just keeping it loose and limber. And then he got back on the field and played. So it's like anything else. You get a contusion, which is the Auburn word of the night, contusion, which means bruise, Auburn fans. And basically you put ice on it, you take some ibuprofen, you brace it down to get the to get the blood out of the area, and you're fine in 2 or 3 days. The bruise goes away. So we're fine. We're fine. We're fine. He's fine.
Hey, I got a question for y'all, but before I do, I'd like to tell everybody about a great friend of mine, Adam, at Ace Tree and Landscaping. My friend is a certified arborist. What that means is he is the Nick Saban of trees. If you need any tree removed, tree fertilized, you got any kind of landscaping need, this guy is a ground floor from the ground up kind of guy. Best tree and landscaping man in the state, my boy Adam at Ace Tree and Landscaping in Birmingham. Check him out. My question for Bird and Thomas is, a lot of people are saying this is Derek Dooley's last chance to save his job. Do you see that to be true?
Yes.
Absolutely. If he doesn't beat Alabama and or South Carolina in the next 2 weeks, just pack it up and go. There's no chance he stays on past this season.
Bird?
We could go ahead and send the spray up to the funeral home because he's a dead man.
They get the truck ready, huh? Derek Dooley is out of there. My same question to y'all, does Gene Chizik survive this year?
Question mark. That's a question mark. I don't know that, you know, again, I saw a young man this week at the car dealership, and he walked up to me, and of course, it is Tennessee Hate Week. I'll remind everybody that you should wear your Bama gear every damn day on Tennessee Hate Week. And I was decked out, man, had my hat on, had my crimson shirt, and the guy came over and says, well, I'm an Auburn fan. You guys are playing great ball. And I told him, I said, you know, you have a proud program. I don't particularly like it, but you got a proud program. I said, but this is it's time for you as fans to take your program back. You need to rise up in righteous indignation and overthrow that terribly despotic power that's down there between Jay Jacobs, who has to be the bastard son of Pat Dye, because I can't believe that they let that guy run be the AD. And then I said, you know, the way you guys vote is by saying, I'm not ever going back to Pat Dye Field ever again and buying another ticket until you make some major changes in the program. And I said, unfortunately, that's on you. That's on you, the fan base. And I said, but now you got, you know, Chizik's wife basically posting, you know, get rid of the great Satan and, you know, y'all pray for us and this, that, and the other. Hell, you boys don't need prayer. You need to add some pounds and learn how to block and tackle. All the prayers in the world are not going to help that football team. The last miracle that Auburn had was a black kid named Cam Newton, and I'm telling you, they sold their soul to the devil to be able to do that, and look at what's gone on. So anyway, I think Chizik may still be there if they keep Pat Dye. That's the thing. And Pat Dye has to go. So it was a long-winded way, legend, of saying Chizik is a question mark because of Pat Dye. And Pat keeps in public saying that Chizik's his boy.
What do you think, Thomas?
I could see him being fired if they lose to Vanderbilt. I could see him staying on, but Scott Loeffler leaving. The fact of the matter is the national championship has bought Gene Chizik some time. When he was hired, I wasn't crazy about the hire. I maintain being not crazy about the hire. But I don't know. The power structure at Auburn is just weird. That's the best way. It's a weird power structure that isn't going to unravel itself. If it turns against him, he's gone. Otherwise, he'll stay. That's the best answer I have for you right now.
Who else is on the hot seat in the SEC, bro?
Well, it's right now, I would say the two guys that stick out. Mississippi State's doing a good job. Ole Miss is absolutely an improved team. Florida, you know, last year they were talking about Muschamp, and my God, Florida's playing like Florida of old, except they've got defense. You know, you kind of go – Spurrier's having a good year. I think Vanderbilt is always going to be Vanderbilt no matter who's at the helm, but they're at least playing respectable football. You know, I think those two guys are the ones that at the end of the day – well, let's take that back. That's the garbage truck in reverse, boys. No way on God's green earth that Larry, Curly, and Moe up in Arkansas is going to have anything extended. So there will be a new coach in Arkansas as well. I forgot the dumpster fire west that's going on out to out there in Pigville. So, but that would be it. Those guys, those three.
Well, let me add one because I unfortunately think Joker Phillips is about to lose his job at Kentucky. I'm a Joker Phillips fan. I think he had nothing to go for and nothing to work with. His young classes, his young kids, his underclassmen are good. Just there's no senior leadership on that team. You give Joker Phillips a couple more years, I think Kentucky can be competitive, and that's tough considering Calipari and basketball rule that state. But he's done, and it really makes me sad because I like him as an individual and I like him as a coach.
He's a good coach, and I think you're right. I think he inherited a cupboard that was completely bare, and I think he's recruited lights out up there, and I think he's got some good kids coming in, and I think if they would give him two more years, that the Kentucky faith would be very, very happy. And I will take umbrage to a bit of what you said. I think the fact is that Kentucky football is to Kentucky basketball as Alabama basketball is to Alabama football, and the way that makes sense is that they are so dominant in basketball that that's their sport, and they kind of halfway give a crap about the other program, meaning football. And the fact that Calipari is so effective and so dominantly, he basically is ruling the roost to a large degree in the NCAA and is putting a perennial powerhouse on the hardwood, really takes the pressure off of Joker. But I don't think he's a bad coach. I think he's a good coach, and I like him as a guy. And I think that he inherited a terrible group of players, and he's recruited well, and one more year, and you might start seeing a real upsurge in the Kentucky program. And you're right, I was remiss in not saying that he would get burned, but he's probably not long for this world, and it's too bad. The other guys, by the way, Dooley, yeah, shoot him. Chizik, shoot. Mo, Larry, Curley up in Arkansas should have been shot. He shouldn't have ever been hired, period. So,
hey, let me tell everybody about some real-life Pawn Stars at Delta Pawn in Birmingham at 6th Avenue South. My boy Gene Paul, you see Pawn Stars on television. I got to meet Gene Paul. He's a real-life Pawn Star right here in Birmingham, Alabama, 3416 6th Avenue South. Go by and tell Gene Paul the legend sent you by Delta Pawn. My question for y'all in closing tonight as we get near the end, it's been a quick hour. I've really enjoyed it here on the island tonight. We're at the halfway mark in the football season. That's hard to believe. Thomas, right now at the halfway mark, who is the coach of the year in the SEC?
Ooh, I would have to go Will Muschamp. It would be between Will Muschamp and Kevin Sumlin, quite honestly.
Really? Okay. Well, I'm going to add one to that, and I'm going to jump in without you even asking, legend, but I think Hugh Freeze, anybody
Ooh.
That has watched Ole Miss play, there is such a difference in that team between last year and this year. It may not be reflecting in win-loss, but my God, it's reflecting on the field. They played pretty spirited against Alabama. Well, probably the best team, and I hate to say this, but it may be the best team we faced this year was Ole Miss.
I was impressed with Ole Miss, too. I think he's done a good job, and I think for the first time in many years, that program has a bright future if they can hold on to it.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with him.
I won't argue with Thomas's picks either, though, because those guys have done a great job. But I would have to throw Hugh Freeze's name into the hat, because watching Ole Miss the past 2 years under Houston Nutt was woeful. It was absolutely woeful. And this team seems to have their head screwed on straight. It's basically the same kids that Houston had, with a couple of got rid of the joke of the quarterback, but I give Hugh just a huge amount of props on taking a bad program and making it at least respectable with a light at the end of the tunnel. So
my coach of the year would be Dan Mullins at this point in time. I think he's kind of did at Mississippi State what you see Freeze doing at Ole Miss, and he has made Mississippi State a factor on a national level, and I look for them to come into Alabama and be a real challenge for us this year. And I wouldn't believe I would be saying that at the start of the year, but after watching this team, this is the best Mississippi State team possibly ever that they have put on the field. It's a really good team. I don't think they're on Alabama's level, but I love what Dan Mullins is doing. And here's the thing, Nick Saban is so good, he don't even get in the conversation. And that's a shame when you're so good that, they don't even – it's kind of like the Yankees. And by the way, bud, your Yankees are in bad trouble, brother.
Oh, and when I saw Derek Jeter's ankle get
– Oh, God.
Stomach just turned, because he is one of my favorite of all time baseball players. He's like Brooks Robinson, Cal Ripken, I can start George Brett, Carlton Fisk, guys that are just true heroes to me. And Derek Jeter is one of those true heroes, and it just killed me the other night. So, yeah. Well, man, it's been
Yankee season, too.
Really fun show tonight, and you know what? I'll have a show ginned up if you want to do it tomorrow night. I don't know if I can do the board, but if you want to do a call in and take calls tomorrow.
Let's get with me, ain't you?
Yeah, I'll roll with it. It'd be fun.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to be, mind everybody again, I'm going to be up at Backwoods Guns and Ammo I'm going to do the show from up there tomorrow night. I'm going to be up there all day tomorrow at 6595 Highway 43 in Spruce Pine, Alabama, with my friend Dennis, located on the corner of 43 and 13. Going to be up there signing a few autographs, meeting people, talking about BAM's radio. Also going to be on a local radio station up there promoting BAM's tomorrow and telling everybody about our program with BAM's radio. So come by if you're in that area. Thomas Bird, thank you so much, man. I love both you brothers. Great show tonight. It's Hate Week. I can't wait to put a beating on Tennessee.